meeting of the mayor and the council of the borough of Atlantic Highlands is called pursuant to the provisions of the open public meeting law. Adequate notice has been provided by transmitting the resolution of the annual meetings to the Asbury Park Press and to the Two River Times by posting it in the Borough Hall on a bulletin board reserved for such announcements, and by filing it in the municipal clerk on January 3rd, 2022. This agenda is complete to the extent known and formal action will be taken. Roll call.
Mr. Murphy.
Here.
Ms. Hohenleitner.
Here.
Mr. Dougherty.
Here.
Mr. Crowley.
Here.
Mr. Barakia.
Here.
Mr. Bombs.
Here.
Mayor Gluckstein.
Here. Please stand for a silent prayer and pledge allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Welcome, everybody. It's so great to see everyone here tonight. So right now, I need a motion and a second to approve the previous meeting minutes.
So moved.
Second, Crowley.
And roll call.
Mr. Murphy.
Yes.
Ms. Hohenleitner.
Yes.
Mr. Dougherty.
Yes.
Mr. Crowley.
Yes.
Mr. Barakia.
Yes.
Mr. Bombs.
Yes.
Minutes have passed.
And Resolution 44-2022, appointment of Police Chief Scott Reiner.
I'll move it.
I'll second.
Well, third, fourth, and fifth.
Roll all second.
Did you get that?
Got it.
Okay, so, and roll call.
Mr. Murphy.
Yes.
Ms. Hohenleitner.
Congratulations, yes.
Mr. Dougherty.
Yes, congratulations.
Mr. Crowley.
Congratulations, yes.
Mr. Barakia.
Yes, congratulations.
Mr. Bombs.
Yes, congratulations.
Resolution 44 has passed.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
And to the governments established in the United States.
And to the governments established in the United States.
And in this state.
And in this state.
Under the authority of the people.
Under the authority of the people.
And that I will faithfully, impartially, and justly.
And I will faithfully, impartially, and justly.
Perform all the duties of Chief of Police.
Perform all the duties of Chief of Police.
According to the best of my ability.
According to the best of my ability.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Take some pictures, right?
Yeah,
quick picture. Okay.
Yeah, please. Or anything, get a sign. Oh, awesome. Sign right here.
You can't change your mind now. Official.
Right on the Bible.
Okay, so Tammy, stay up here.
Scott, I'd like to present you with your badge. First, I'm going to say a few words. I've worked with Scott every step of his career. When he started as a dispatcher, lucky to be his supervisor throughout the years. Mayor and Council picked a fine choice to be our next police chief. He's going to do a great job for at least the next 11 years. Long road ahead of us. Thank you with your badge. Yes, sir. Appreciate it.
You know, she's awesome. She's open toed on that side. Scott, there's some blood coming out of your shirt. That's all about.
Thank you. I just want to say a couple words. Thank you to the council. Obviously, I was sitting in this chair, sweating my butt off last week. So thank you. I'm not going to disappoint you guys. Appreciate it. The community, obviously, everyone that's here, you're a great group of individuals. They're awesome. They are true professionals, and I appreciate everything that they do. I have full faith that they'll continue providing the best service that the country has, to be honest with you. I think it's great. Family, obviously, you saw the bus come up. Girls, Candy, my wife, she's a stay-at-home mom, so I just leave. And it's convenient, so I recommend it. extended family, friends, obviously, thanks for coming. I appreciate it. That's it. I'm not going to disappoint you, so thank you. I just want to point out one thing that I forgot just in my brain. Every person that's hired me as a police officer is here in this room. Dustin Macko, Chief Macko from Seeger, gave me my first shot. Chief Vasto said I wasn't Italian, but he was desperate, so he went with me. And then Chief brought us back on. Honestly, he's been with me since I was a dispatcher. He saw a lot of me and gave me this chance, so appreciate it. That's it. I'm done. I'm just my dad and mom, they're off the show.
Oh, yay!
Thanks, guys. Sorry about that.
No, no, it's great. Congratulations.
I'm just going to give everyone a minute to leave when they, if they want. So I'm going to hold her off right now.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So take the workshop out of order.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah. Workshop on the mosquito.
Yeah.
Right?
Do they all know that there's an open bar and a discount? For
yeah.
What if somebody hits a home run? You're on your way home. It's on sale right now.
Yeah. Anytime I've ever left a concert early, they always play the good stuff right at the end.
Exactly right.
Yeah, I saw Hootie and the Blowfish in Camden, and it was like an experience going there. And like, we parked in this area, it was like not a great area, whatever. It was a great concert, and the guy I was with was like, "Come on, let's get out of here." We left, and they played all day. All day. Like the hit list right at the end. Yeah.
I always think about being at the Dodger game when Richardson hit that home run in the ninth inning.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And if you watch Vin Scully's announcement, he goes,
"That ball's coming." You'll be up now.
Taillights on the parking lot. Yeah. The brakes going, "Oh, I missed it. How did that happen?"
I think he's got some.
Oh! Hey!
Holy moly!
It's good. You're a dog
here. Hiding in the back. How's it going?
Hey, Adam.
Adam.
Adam, if you stick around, it's open bar and disco in 35 minutes.
That's how long the meeting's going to be. You've heard it.
Yeah, 35 minutes. You heard it. 35 minutes.
We get right? The consultant.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
What do you want, John?
What?
Thank you, sir. Thanks,
Brian. Yeah,
thank you, sir.
Okay, so we're going to be going out of order right now. We're going to do the workshop discussion for the Monmouth County Mosquito Commission, Victoria Thompson. She has a deadline to, so come up, please. You can come up and sit if you'd like. Just be careful of the wires.
That mic should be on because it's hardwired.
Yeah, that's right.
You can sit right there.
Mm-hmm. I can check home.
Okay. Thank you for coming in tonight.
So I know that the resolution that would authorize aerial treatment for mosquitoes is on your agenda. So I'm here to answer some questions and fill you in on. The resolution is basically an FAA requirement to have permission to apply pesticides within a jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
And the county does do a blanket resolution, but we'd like to get all of the municipalities on board so you know what we're doing and what we're planning. It is written to cover both adult mosquito control, which would be putting out a spray to kill the flying mosquitoes, and it's also for larviciding operations, which we would apply pesticide to standing water to kill the larvae. That is, the latter is what we do. The applying, doing adult mosquito control by air, it's only would be if we had an extreme health emergency, and this resolution would just be, one of the check boxes of things that we would have to do to spread over residential property.
It's emergency purposes.
Right. So we included in this resolution just because it takes a while to get a municipality to pass a resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And if we have a public health emergency, we don't have that time.
Okay, got that.
Our strategy in Monmouth County and actually throughout the whole state is to focus on control of the mosquitoes in the larval stages in the water.
Mm-hmm.
That's because it's easier to treat a smaller area of water versus an air column. Plus, the pesticides we use are more targeted to mosquito larvae and only, it's not going to affect other animals. and the product that we use for our aerial water siding is Vecto Prime in this part of the area, and the active ingredient, and I have the labels I can leave with the point if you want.
Okay, thank you.
PTI is a low impact, it's a natural bacteria, and then there's also Methoprene that takes care of the later stages of mosquito larvae.
Okay.
Within Atlantic Highlands, the only place we treat by helicopter is the confined disposal facility, the dredge soil area that gets full of water, and there's also mud cracks in there, and the mosquitoes, the salt marsh mosquito, would lay their eggs in those mud cracks, so when it gets flooded, they would pop off. So that's the only area that we treat by helicopter.
And you are from the county,
yes.
Right? And is there any town that does not do this?
I have to be honest that Asbury Park, for some reason, does not pass the resolution.
Okay. But it's like the whole county, and this is for emergency purposes only.
The larvae siding is regularly done.
Okay.
Okay, that's our regular operations, and people in the Bayshore we know would see our green helicopter treating the marshes. That's in conjunction with the spring tides, but the upper marshes are where the mosquitoes breed. So that's our normal operations. We're doing adult mosquito control by air. Quite honestly, I doubt it would ever happen, at least when I'm here. You know, it would have to be a multiple outbreak of disease. We normally, if we have to do adult siding, and we did do an operation a few years ago here, is in response to a human case of West Nile, and we do the neighborhood where we have horses out west that have gotten West Nile, where we have lots of mosquito samples that we send to the state have come back positive for West Nile.
Okay, and Zika?
Zika, we monitor for the mosquito. Aedes albopictus, which is the Asian tiger mosquito, will possibly carry it, but the main vector is Aedes aegypti, which is a tropical.
So they don't come up
they're
here?
They're not here yet. Okay.
Anyone else on? Also have any questions?
One quick question. How long has this program been in existence? How many years has this been taking place?
The mosquito in general?
The larvae siding operations?
Since 1914. There's been a mosquito extermination commission in New Jersey. 1912 is when the law was passed, and it's basically requires all counties to have some level of mosquito control for public health purposes.
Are you able to cover Atlantic Highlands in a single day with one spring?
Well, we would, in terms of adult mosquito control, we wouldn't do that unless we had
an emergency.
The West Nile or whatever. I should say we would never do it because probably not in Atlantic Highlands, but like Warren Cliffwood Beach, if we couldn't do larva siding of the salt marshes and the salt marsh mosquitoes came off in a brood, and the reason why we wouldn't do it is because of weather, and within the week that it takes for larvae to go from egg to adult, they would all come off at once, and they're very aggressive biting mosquitoes. We would do a localized operation to knock down the population to make life bearable, but other than that, it's not our strategy.
Does that affect other species?
The adult society pesticides tend to affect more insects. Like we have to give notification to beekeepers, and we use it at the lowest rate. So we are talking thousands of active ingredient per acre. And we also do the operations late at night, like early, like 4 to 6 in the morning, or around midnight. So when the insects are not active and people aren't around, so we do what we can to reduce exposure of anything.
And then you notify the local police, who then do a swift 911 call.
Yeah. We would send a typical as we send the administrator a map of the area. You know, when we put on our website a map of the area and the product we're going to use and the time we're going to be doing the operation.
When's the last time you sprayed in Atlantic Islands?
For adult mosquito control?
Anything.
Well, the larvicide, and you do yearly.
Mm-hmm.
You do at least probably more than
this. What she's passing tonight is for emergency purposes only.
Right. I'm just curious about, because every year somebody comes and visits and we discuss and...
She does.
Somebody does.
It's not just for emergency, because mm-hmm. the larvicide is normal.
But for the adult.
For the adult.
I'm talking about everything. I'm not talking about just emergency.
Right. And I mean, for us, if you know, people call us as well, because they're being eaten alive or they have a bad mosquito problem, then we will go to properties and do inspections and look for the source of water where the larvae are.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a bucket, we'll dump it. If it's, you know, someone has a hot tub home that's not being maintained or a pool that's not being maintained, we'll treat it to kill the larvae.
And all the people that do this are licensed.
Yeah.
They go and they have schooling.
Yeah,
right.
We have commercial.
Right.
Have mm-hmm. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
We have to follow the legal.
Right.
It's all public record.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Does anyone else? Any questions? Thank you so much for coming.
Help us do mosquito control and dump those buckets.
Well, that's it.
The tires.
That's it.
Yeah, right.
You know, even the smallest amount of water.
Yeah.
You're right.
So
we need to do a better job of making people aware to standing water, get rid of. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for coming out tonight.
Any questions, you're always welcome to call our office.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Sure. Absolutely. Okay. So now we're going to jump back up to unfinished business, which is the ordinance 3-2022, amending chapter 139, article 2, entitled Parking of the Code of the Borough of Atlantic Highlands. Public hearing, possible adoption. I need a motion in a second.
Friendly move.
Second, Dr.
Okay. And so, all in favor?
Aye.
So, who wants to go over this?
Mayor, this is, just looking for my notes. This is amending the, as you said, the code, chapter 139, parking for the borough of Atlantic Highlands.
I have an ordinance.
I got it too. I just had a thumbnail of each point. Oh, here we go. Nope. I'm going to have to just go from the ordinance. All right, so we're talking about Railroad Avenue Municipal Parking Lot, except with overnight parking. Overnight parking permits are non-transferable. Permits must be prominently displayed at all times. Permit holders may park their vehicle on either the Railroad Avenue Municipal Parking Lot or the Holly Tree Municipal Parking Lot. Permits issued by the Atlantic Highlands Police Department. Department shall establish rules and procedures for the issuance, renewal, and control of permits and permit parking. Administrative fee, as provided in Chapter 168, per year shall be charged. There will be no charge for handicapped or temporary permits. Overnight parking permits are non-transferable. Permits must be prominently displayed at all times. Also, we are extending the Holly Tree parking lot time limit to 6 hours. Except if an overnight parking permit is issued by the police department. And that's to allow our residents, if they want to go into the city, go see a show, have dinner, they're not feeling pressed on time.
Eliminating the overnight parking prohibition.
Right. So we're also eliminating along the western curb line on Hennessy Boulevard between Center Avenue and Bay Avenue.
Jason, there was a overnight parking prohibition on that street, right? So that's what we're eliminating.
Okay. Jason, you can, why don't you read that one?
Yeah. And that's the last thing you mentioned, Councilman, was the elimination of the overnight parking prohibition along the western curb line of Hennessey Boulevard between Center Avenue and Bay Avenue. And I think that pretty much does it in terms of what the ordinance amendment proposed, ordinance amendment would do.
The bottom line is the parking committee is always looking for other ways to expand availability for the residents to park. And so this was being able to carve out a few additional spaces over on the Holly Tree lot specifically, and also Hennessey. So that's our sort of charter commitment to the town, and so this is one thing that we wanted to do at the beginning of this year to pre-data.
Okay. Are there any questions?
I have a question. Boy, and Steve, did the Harbor Commission vote on this or discuss this?
No, it hasn't come to the Harbor Commission.
No.
Should it go to the Harbor Commission, out of curiosity? Well,
no. It's already your municipal lots.
Yeah. They can't amend the ordinance.
Right.
We only you can.
And does anybody know, was Green Acres money used to purchase these lots or develop these lots by any chance?
Beats me, man.
Great question.
That was brought to my attention, and I don't know if that would have an issue or conflict with this, so I wanted to.
I don't know. If it's already a parking lot, basically all you're doing is changing the times that people can park there.
You're not changing.
It doesn't seem like it to me. You're not changing the use.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
I didn't know what the charging for the permit.
I think what people are talking about, Councilman, is the green over by the municipal lot. People talk about that all the time. There's that little patch of green. Can we carve into that? And we're Green Acre open public space funds used for that. This is already a parking lot, as Mr. Senna said.
Yes.
There's no change of use, so it's not like there's a variance. You're just opening up what available spaces are there and changing some time limits and saying that we need permits. That's all we're doing. So and it's not harbor land, it's borough.
Is the permit going to have a fee attached to it?
Yes, sir.
So that was my concern with Green Acres. You're not, we can't charge the fee.
Again, if the usage of the property is not changing.
Is already in place. I just want to make sure we're covering that.
Yeah, and I don't believe it was Green Acres property. We can look into that and inform everyone after. And if there's any stipulations that conflict with what we're doing, we can address that in time. But I don't think that there's any issue here.
No.
Doug, I mean, just because the issue is raised, I don't believe you can use Green Acres to purchase land for parking. Can you? Open space is something different, but Green Acres.
In my experience, it's typically utilized for open space and acquisitions of such, but a parking component to support a recreational activity or open space area, possibly. I don't have any more specifics on this specific.
Yeah. Actually, no, I just want to make sure we've done our due diligence and look at that, because I do know that that's an issue with that, so.
Okay.
But all right.
So, are there any questions or comments from the public? Okay, anyone online?
No raised hands at this time.
Okay, so then I need a motion and a second.
Friendly moves.
Copy, second.
Okay, all in favor? To get it, come out.
Yeah, may have a member of the public with a question.
Oh, I didn't see your hand. I'm sorry. Nope, just stay right there.
Okay.
Sorry.
My name is Joe Bagnold.
Address,
founder,
please.
Founder and producer of the First Avenue Playhouse across the city.
Mm-hmm. The clerk needs your address, here, too. I'm sorry.
I guess you know what I'm here for, but I wrote you a letter explaining the situation with the department. Now, I don't know what you guys talk about tonight because I can't hear.
Oh, okay.
And the hearing aids and VA aids, so forgive me if I repeat whatever you guys talk about. But anyway, my main concern is the fact that back in February, it was a sweep in town where somebody complained, and all my actors and patrons got tickets. So we complained about it because I've been there over 35 years. And all that time, we never got tickets on a Sunday. The rest of the week, fine, but not Sunday. Okay? When I investigated a little bit, I found out that in 2016, somebody complained to a board member and they had a meeting, and they changed the ordinance from six-day parking to seven-day parking. Now, it's not fair to the people here like us that have been here so long, and for one person to complain, and all of a sudden there's no parking on Sundays. I mean, you have on Fridays, you have people that come in from out of town, and they're allowed to park around the park there. 1 hour parking, they get permission to do that. We need permission to do something on Sundays. Everything else is at night for us, so does it affect us? But Sunday doesn't. Okay? And it's not fair the way we're treated. I need you guys to get together and see if somebody can say, well, maybe he's right, let's have an ordinance change back to the way it was for 100 years. It was for a long time, it was six-day parking, and then 2016 till now. And nobody told us. That's another thing. When they changed the ordinance, all the business owners were told. I just found out now we got tickets that the ordinance changed. When Captain Vassil was in charge, I heard that he sided with us, and he just didn't send his cops out on Sunday. But I can't expect that all the time. I can't expect the new one to do that, So I need your help. I need somebody to help change this ordinance back to 6 days.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Bagnell, can you hear me?
No, I can't.
We received your note. It was passed to us in the parking committee. And so the parking committee is looking into your letter about expanding the time limits on First Avenue. And I think that's part of your issue. It might not be all of your issue, but it has been brought up in parking committee, and it'll probably be brought up again at the next parking committee meeting. Okay, so we're aware. I'll talk with you later.
Huh?
I'll talk with you later.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor, one member of the public with a raised hand.
Okay.
I will allow Ms. Broughton to speak.
Hello, Ms. Broughton.
Yes, my name is Jane Broughton. For 25 years. I'm the member of the
Real quick, Ms. Broughton, your address?
And some of the issues. What?
Your address for Michelle.
I'm sorry, 10 Ocean Boulevard.
Okay, thanks.
Apartment 2E. And as a member of the Harwich Commission, we did the skateboard park, and we also took care of the parking facilities in the harbor. And one of my issues that you're talking about is charging for parking in the Holly Tree parking lot.
One of my issues is, has the Harbor Commission investigated that and approve that before they
went
to the council?
That's no.
Well, that is a harbor property, and I think before you pass that, I think you ought to have it brought to the Harbor Commission for approval.
Harbor property?
It is part of Green Acres, and they have never charged for parking in Green Acres. That's why we don't need to be charged in the harbor.
Thank you, Ms. Broughton. Thank you.
And will we get an answer back at the next meeting?
Well, so as soon when public comment ends, I think we'll probably have a conversation that will address your concerns.
All right, thank you, Lori.
Thank you.
Is that it?
No other hand raised.
Okay, so I need a motion and a second. I think I did this, but...
Hang on, one more.
Patricia
Rowland.
Rowland, you said? Hello, Miss Rowland? Miss Rowland?
Give it a minute.
Is the hand still raised, Doug?
Hand raised. Mike is muted on the other side.
You can unmute because we can't hear you, miss. Can you unmute her?
No, she has to.
Does she have a phone or she has a computer?
Here's the zoning computer.
Miss, if you can hear us, you just have to unmute yourself if you want to comment at this time. Well, okay. Let's see. Maybe she figures it out what to do. We'll come back to that. We'll have a discussion.
So,
motion a second to come out of public comment.
Mm-hmm. And then all in favor?
So moved.
And now,
so. Can I actually, there were a few questions that were brought up that we didn't have answers to, and Ms. Broughton's experience on the Harbor Commission, I take that with a lot of weight. And we have a Harbor Commission meeting on Tuesday, so it's not like we're going to have to wait a long, long time to rectify, you know, at least get answers to those questions. Because I'm in favor of this if we're allowed to do it, but I think, Steve, do you think we should bring it to Harbor?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea, and by the next meeting we should have an answer.
Even if the Harbor doesn't need to be consulted, at least we know that we can do it expeditiously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is the first time any of these issues have been raised.
Exactly.
So it'd be good to make sure everybody's on
board. We want to make sure that everything is done.
Yeah.
And we can get the wheels started by contacting the Harbor Commission attorney to advise of this question that we have. So
and
at least we don't have to wait to start from a commission meeting.
Right.
We can start the process as early as tomorrow morning with that communication.
Great.
Okay, then we can have a meeting if we need to take something.
Correct.
So I hear you want to table it?
I'm going to make a motion to table it, please.
Okay. So, roll call.
Mr. Verbe.
Yes.
Ms. Hohenleitner.
Yes.
Mr. Dougherty.
Yes.
Mr. Crowley.
Yes.
Mr. Barakia.
Yes.
Mr. Bombs.
Yes.
Ordinance 03-2022 has been tabled.
Okay, now we can go and move on to our workshop for the parking garage.
Before we just go in, if Ms. Rowland, if you can hear us, if you have a comment that you want to make, please reach out to the borough administrator tomorrow, rfaragina@ahmj.com.
Mr. Fish, you just watch the there's what like on
yep.
the ground. Okay. All right.
Yeah, man.
Oh, pass them down?
Yep.
Pass them down.
And I think Mr. Fisher, who is our parking committee chairman, has got about 40 handouts that are available to anybody in the public that wants the handouts. Where are they, Mark? Oh, they're being passed out right now. Great. Okay. Mark, you let me know when you're ready and I can properly introduce you. You need one more.
You should be able to now. Mark, you have to share a screen with me. There you go, you're on. Mark? Good to go.
Okay. There once was a little town about a mile square with less than 5,000 inhabitants, with a thriving business district, over a dozen different places to eat, and another 30-something places to shop. Less than 5 years ago, there were roughly 50 apartments along that main street of that town. And that main street and their historic business district had enough spaces for cars to park. And along with 117 spaces in the town's parking lot, that little town rarely had to worry about accommodating anyone who wished to come and spend time seeing a movie,
having dinner, going shopping, or even get an ice cream, or go take a look at the city skyline from across the bay. Then in only a few years' time, more shops, restaurants, and more apartments suddenly appeared, with another 50 apartments set to open later in just the next couple of years. With the planning board handing out 110 of the available 117 municipal parking spaces to those apartment building developers, this town, Atlantic Highlands, is set to become a type of cliche that no one wants to hear from visitors or its residents when they ask, "You want to go into town and grab a bite?" And somebody in that party says, "Nah, it's too much of a hassle. I can't ever find a place to park." For the next 25 minutes, you'll be hearing from members of the parking committee and an expert in the construction of municipal parking structures. I hope you'll listen and ask questions as our town, especially as we emerge from this pandemic, is on the verge of becoming like other nearby towns where people stopped visiting because it was too much of a hassle to find a place to park. Some of you might remember Atlantic Highlands in the 80s when the recession had us up against the ropes. Let's not become a victim of our own success. I'll ask the council if you can kindly hold your questions to the very end of the workshop so that we can just sort of chug through this as quickly and efficiently as possible. And our first presenter will be our chairman of the Parking Advisory Committee, Mark Fisher.
Thank you, Councilman. Back to the floor before we get started, I'd be remiss if I didn't introduce the members of the Mayor's Parking Advisory Committee. First off is Brian Dougherty and John Crowley up on the dais. Brian is a new mayoral appointee this year, and John has been on this committee for over 2 years and was on Mayor Bryce's committee back in 2018 and 2019. Bob Sherman, who's out in the audience, owns the jewelry shop on First Avenue, has been serving just as long as John on both committees, and I think maybe even a little bit further back. Paul Wright is with us virtually. He's the software finance manager, and he's the environmental committee liaison to the parking committee. Caroline Northrup is an art teacher at AHES, lived in Ten Ocean when she was appointed last year, along with Michael Burke, a professional firefighter who lives in one of the new county buildings. I'd also like to acknowledge two former members of the committee, ex-Mayor Fred Rass and retired businessman Fred Kelly, both served with us on the committee up until last year. This opportunity to address the public and the council, as I said, has been a long time coming. The last time I pitched a parking idea to the council was back in 2018. Since then, there are five new mixed-use buildings, mostly approved between 2016 and 2019. You all know them. These buildings are 4048 First, where Urban Maine is, 60 First, where Kennedy and Vine is, 35 First, where the Little Chicken is, and number 2 Hennessy right across the street from the Hess building. And now 158 First, currently under construction by the school. Between the five buildings, there are 88 new apartments and 20,000 square feet of new retail space. So if you do some simple math with some horses calculations, 80 apartments conservatively is about 1.5 cars per apartment. That's 120 cars. The retail space for every 1,000 square feet is 4 cars. That's 80 cars at peak period. So that's 200 new cars into the business district in the last 5 years. Back when Jerry Vasco was police chief, the chair of the previous committee, Mayor LeBrice, would sometimes ask him, "Jerry, how many overnight parking permits have been issued for the railroad lot?" And back then only 19 were reserved for overnight parking. 25, he said. "More applications are coming in. Mayor, we need to do something." Main Road Avenue parking lot has 117 parking spaces, 6 of which are reserved for handicap parking. 110 overnight parking permits have been issued by the Atlantic Commons Police Department. Someone has been issued an overnight parking permit for just about every spot in the lot. Back in 2017, seeing all the mixed-use building applications, all but one proposed without on-site parking projects, and all being approved by the planning board. One of our residents, Jim Kraft, suggested to the council back then that they really should seriously consider building a parking deck. So let's talk about these parking structures. After a very detailed study back in 2005 under Mayor Donahue, commissioned by the borough and the New Jersey Department of Transportation, a parking deck was suggested for the hardware, an 800-car parking deck, to satisfy both ferry commuter and business parking issues. That idea was shot down. Need, cost, size, and blocking the water view were some of the reasons first to mind. Mayor Rast also proposed a parking in the retail mixed-use structure, but this one would be in the business district, built over the railroad avenue lot. I saw very nice renderings. It appeared to be two levels, which would have been space for about 200 cars. It too was shot down because of cost and the question of need. Anyone in town knows the main parking lot is full or near full most of the time, mornings, afternoons, and evenings. Thursday through Sunday evenings, with or without warm weather, with the lot full, we all see the cars circling, adding to our traffic issues, certainly more than deciding whether to leave town to get dinner or to park lot full. I mentioned cost as a deciding factor to not moving forward with parking structures in the past. But how much has inadequate parking for the business district cost the merchants, the restaurateurs, theater, and even over the past 10 years? How much fuel is burned circling around looking for a parking space? How many new businesses didn't come to Atlantic Island because of the lack of adequate parking? Mr. Krause and Chief Vasso were 100% correct 4 or 5 years ago. It was time to do something back then. And without question, with 200 additional cars now, with little or no added parking, it is certainly time to do something or at least get to a point where the facts and data would support moving forward through the process. The parking committee is not all about pursuing a parking structure. We have been very busy pursuing other parking initiatives, squeezing in or pulling back more low or no cost spaces convenient to the business district. Two of those initiatives we just talked about this evening. At a cost of some signage and some new parking lot striping, that would have opened up parking spaces overnight at the Holly Tree Lot and along Hennessy Boulevard. There's been a project proposed for over 4 years to add angle parking along Hennessy Boulevard between Center and Highland Avenues, doubling the parking spaces there. The project is designed. Round numbers for construction now is about $100,000. It just needs to be funded to move forward. Last year, Chief Rosbach proposed parking along Ocean Boulevard. Depending on what would have been approved, 15 to 30 spaces would have been added at virtually no cost. Just signs and striping. The town's residents spoke loud and clear. They didn't want them, and they weren't added. The Wells Fargo Bank lot stands empty on weekends and evenings. Former business administrator Ubany negotiated an agreement with the bank manager to use the bank when it was closed. That's 24 available spaces. The cost? Some. But we never got an agreement from their corporate division. The current business administrator was asked to revisit that option and has. St. Paul's Church is another option. Similar situation, but different availability, and the business administrator is weighing the options on that lot. In each of those two options, the borough would enact a hold harmless agreement and provide liability protection for the hours the borough uses those private parking spaces. Between the two, that's 48 in low or no cost spaces becoming available. Parking in any town has a lot of moving parts, and every season imposes different stresses at different times. In addition to the days, evenings, and night parking, and the weekends, parking affects uncertainty of the under construction and the future projects, what gets put in the retail space of the building. And the fourth extreme, peak parking events, the car show, fireman's fair, fireworks. So where do we go from here? This committee, as you've seen, has done whatever it could to optimize the number of spaces spread out on a horizontal landscape where it's convenient to the business district. The optimization phase is complete. Another option is the council could choose to do nothing. Just accept that the parking availability is at its max do nothing and hope for the best. But this certainly will cost the existing merchants more business and limit any future growth in the business district. Increased retail means guaranteed parking. Why would any new business come here if they want it? However, we will most likely still see more apartment buildings, refurbishments of existing buildings, or tear downs and rebuilds. Atlantic Islands is a good place to live. The recently approved 65 First Avenue was a prime example. Tearing down two buildings and build a very large, expansive building with 22 apartments. The previous building only had a couple of apartments. More people equals more cars. 65 First is unique in that the developer will provide 100% of their parking needs on site. But where else along First Avenue is that possible? Another choice, we could decide that we could build a parking structure. Vertical growth on an existing parking footprint, multi-level parking in a beautiful building is the best answer to parking, but it comes at a substantial investment. This committee's members, with its wide cross-section of various occupations and where they call home, knows that a good percentage of this town's residents are of the opinion that there absolutely are no parking problems. We hear that all the time, and I respect their opinion. But we also hear others that are absolutely, we are long overdue and in need of a parking structure. We also hear from a third set, those that tell us something absolutely needs to be done, but not a parking garage. In 2005, our elected leaders were concerned enough about parking needs that after a very expensive and extensive study, they adjusted by proposing a structure to the parking structure for the residents. Mayor Rast also saw a need years later and proposed another parking structure, but that time in the business district. Neither moved forward. If there are no parking problems, why then does the need for a parking structure keep coming up as an answer to our parking shortage three times in two decades? Lack of available real estate to add more parking lots convenient to the business district area is a prime reason. There simply is no room. And would that be the best use of business district real estate? And here we are tonight. Except this time, there's 200 more cars added inside the business district. And it's a very convincing additional reason to once again propose a parking structure in 2022. I forgot to mention one other segment of the public, those that ask a simple question. How did we allow all of this construction around the First Avenue? Unfortunately, this committee is now left to fix a big problem. The council should approve funding for the two studies necessary to support or refute a parking structure proposal. If the need is truly there, Atlantic Island should be the ones to make the critical decision whether to move forward to ensure the viability of the downtown. Guarantee the opportunity for growth of the business district in the future and keep Atlantic Island as being the place to come and visit. I'd like to introduce another member of our committee is Carolyn Northrup. She's going to present to you some ideas that she has.
Just be careful. I don't want to tell everyone there's wires. Yeah, just be careful of the wires on the ground. It's okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
So if you guys aren't already, and audience people do, bottom of page 5 is where I start. So a parking structure has an unexpected but added bonus that in that it increases the presence of public art in our town, something that will put us on par with other local towns in terms of attracting more interest and visitors. This is a fantastic means of promoting arts in our community, and I'd like to quickly show some examples of the variety of artistic ideas that can be displayed. So if you look at slide 10, bottom of page 5, a parking structure is a wonderful canvas to showcase artwork both inside and out. Here, we have some exterior examples of painted murals, including pieces on the top deck and creative positioning along the sides of the structure. As you can see, the images can be painted directly onto the concrete or brick, or, in the middle photo, the art can be painted onto panels that are then installed onto the various surfaces inside as well. Either way, the art can be on an easy rotation every several months. Whether it's replacing a panel or painting over an existing mural, that is what's often done in most cases with murals. They're just painted over in rotation. As you know, the examples here are larger, so we have less to cover, in our case with a parking structure, and that means more rotating exhibits with less space to be covering, perhaps. If you go to the next page, and the next slide, that's slide 11, here are some examples of interior artwork, which, along with great lighting, can improve the brightness of these inside spaces. I particularly love the use of art to brighten up the stairwell. That's the bottom middle photo. And as you guys know, in most parking structures, stairwells can be really dreary, even if they're like painted one solid color. So I thought that was really cool when I found that. That's in Texas. And in this last slide, the next page, the bottom, slide 12, bottom of page 6. Here we see a variety of art ideas beyond murals. We do lighting installations, neon words, film screenings, live music, pop-up art installations. The one that says work of art with the origami, that means it's mm-hmm. something we could do with our AAGS students at some point. And finally, in terms of funding, Monmouth Arts and many other statewide nonprofits have extensive and generous grant programs to promote and to maintain public art like this. So in closing, I want to add that an artistic landscape like this could extend into Edward Valley to create a stunning visual entrance gateway to an artfully designed parking structure. And this would then be something that truly puts our town on the map, a destination in itself for local visitors to observe and enjoy.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is going to be Paul Wright. Paul is with us virtually. Paul, are you there?
Hey, hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, great. Hello, everyone. Sorry I can't be there in person, but I've been enjoying the meeting so far, so I'll dive right in. So as Mark and Councilman Crowley said, Atlantic Highlands, you can grow a business that can face in this new world, emerging endemic, energy independence realities, and the softening need to live in a large urban center. But without objective data for informed community discussion and decisions to drive the best approach to our sustainable mobility and parking needs, frankly, we'll throw those opportunities away. I expect that's why the council is listening to us and but the public is ready to ask us questions. And I think the council and the public would like to learn how the parking committee thinks we can move forward with sustainable mobility and parking, but to complete that task and to answer all of those important questions, as Mark mentioned, is hampered without current data and that community feedback. Mark, you can move to the next slide. So why am I here to deliver this part of the message? Okay, obviously as part of the Park Committee and a passionate advocate that lives at the intersection, has lived at the intersection of technology, civic engagement, local economic growth, and sustainability for at this point over 20 years. On the technology side, I've created, sold, and run software companies of all sizes. On the civic engagement side, I led the creation when I lived in Philadelphia prior to being here, the creation of Open Data Philly, which now sits at the core of part of their smart city initiatives. As part of local growth and economic growth, I work with groups of the largest Comcast and small local arts organizations to drive connections between local and neighborhood businesses. And on the sustainability side, I participate in the environmental convention and personally passionate about the environmental impact of everything that we do as human beings. And through that, I've learned that through action, experience, and frankly, some tough lessons at scale, that the combination of these four items plus a common through line of data are critical to providing the collective guidance was thought so that we as a community at Atlantic Highlands can debate and ultimately make an informed decision as to the sustainable mobility and parking infrastructure for our town. working with myself. So, to put out my section, there are three realities that I just wanted to put some of you guys to deal with. We know these can be true even without the very essential study that Mark had mentioned. 3 points on this slide that you look at the same in front of you. Obviously, we are a shore town, but we're a shore town with a delicate ecosystem to protect, which depends upon the right approach to mobility and parking, you know, as we grow into certain coast states. On the clean energy side, we all know we all have an increasing need for energy in our lives, and any parking solution should support clean approaches to providing and managing our energy. And the final thing on the resiliency side, as a shore town, we must have a tangible resiliency plan in the face of changing climate, and parking and mobility are certainly critical elements of any solution that we would have in mind. These are the growth items that we need to keep a clear vision of as we determine how we use our existing assets, how we engage the community to inform the determine the best approach to our sustainable mobility and parking solutions. Thanks for the time, everyone. I'm just
going to
turn it back over to Mark.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. The next speaker is Bob Sherman.
My name is Bob Sherman. I've lived on Harbor Drive for about 39 years. I opened a jewelry store in this town about 18 years ago on First Avenue. So I'd like for you to imagine for a moment that whatever business you're in, that all of a sudden you can't get onto the internet, and you can't get into your office, and the phone's not there. So that's kind of how we feel sometimes on First Avenue. Whether it's a movie theater, or restaurants, or bakery shop, bagels, coffee, gift shop, eyeglass shop, nail salons, pickle sandwich store, attorney's offices, hardware store, food day in, we all do marketing. We all spend money on advertising, we all spend money on rent. And what happens, you can imagine what happens when people try to come to the store in Upper Avenue, they can't park. So it's obvious at this point, after living through all these iterations of discussions on parking and all these plans and coming to meetings and seeing what folks are saying, at this point, with the building that's going up, at this point we have to do something. And we've got some experts that we've interviewed, have been on the parking committee, as Mark mentioned, for over 4 years. We've interviewed experts, some of which that will be here tonight, and hopefully we can all figure out a way of designing a building that will be sustainable, that can help pay for itself, and help the leadership parking.
Thank you, Bob. Okay, our next speaker is a guest speaker. Mr. Jim Thulo met Councilman Crowley back at a League of Municipalities conference in 2018, and he has shared his experience with the Parking Committee. Mr. Thulo is the president of THA Consulting, specializing in mixed use and parking structures of all sizes. Not only in major cities, colleges, and stadiums, but also for small communities such as ours. Jim, you with us?
Mark, thanks very much, and Councilman Sewell, we're going to tell you, appreciate you being here, and everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, great. And I don't know if anybody can see me, but I'll... hopefully I'm presentable, but I would very much enjoy to be there, and if I can be of any use in subsequent meetings, I'm happy to come down and attend in person. So, as Mark mentioned, I serve as president of THA Consulting, and we are the engineering, design, and planning firm that specializes in parking, not only in design structures, but we've done dozens of studies for municipalities throughout mostly the East Coast, but multiple here in New Jersey. As I listened in for kind of the first time to this discussion, I did have a meeting with the parking committee where we kind of went over some of the discussion items. It's obviously a thought out of the committee, the parking committee, for a lot of the work and the diligence and the analysis and the discussion they've undertaken. Obviously, I've worked in a lot of municipalities, but I also served as the director of the New Brunswick Parking Authority in the 1990s when New Brunswick was on, its economic and real estate redevelopment and parking was a critical, critical component of that. So, I'm kind of very versed in some of the discussion that you're having, and I know it's very challenging. I know there's a lot of different views, and what I want to just do today is offer some overall considerations about the planning and design of a parking facility. And as Mark mentioned, we've done, I think one of the artistic visions that came up was one in Atlantic City. We did the CRDA garage there, but we've also done a lot of garages in smaller municipalities, very design sensitive municipalities such as Ridgewood, Princeton, Millburn, McCutcheon, just to name a few. So these are, I want to kind of warn you with the things we do, but we do have a very large presence, in New Jersey, and work in this area. Pre-COVID to design the garage in Lansbury Park as well, as they were kind of having parking problems as a result of their, redevelopment of the road, and although COVID has now kind of put that on hold. So that's a bit about our firm, and I guess at the end, if there's any questions, I'm here to respond to that as well. So next slide, please. So obviously, when we approach not just us, but anybody who's going to take a look at, and I'm kind of starting off with the parking facility, considerations, but then kind of towards the end of this discussion, and kind of talking about some of the other due diligence that would really should take place in advance of, even designing a facility. So, starting a little bit backwards, but I just want to give you some understandings of how, a firm like ours, and we pride ourselves on really understanding that a parking facility is a gateway to your community, that the design of it, the feel of it, the user comfort of it, has to really enhance that visit to Atlantic Highlands. Today, the parking garages historically, due to their mass, due to several other considerations, they're perceived to be not desirable places, and I think from just the brief article you saw, that design concept over the last couple of decades has really changed. And we really look to design that facility so that it becomes an important fabric of your downtown area. So, there's a variety of ways to do that. But again, one of the critical things is just being safe, comfortable, well lit, assuming if there is any payment, that it's very convenient, there's all types of new technology related to parking access and control and that type of thing. So these are a couple of things that we'll speak about, and the artistic presentation really kind of summed it up, that these aren't kind of the warehouse for cars that they were, in the 70s and 80s. As a matter of fact, we're working on a lot of aesthetic redesigns of those types of garages. And just to say in closing on this slide, it is an extremely important municipal infrastructure asset. I think that's probably one of the considerations of a parking garage, is how we can handle, given some of the challenges that I've heard you discuss in this meeting, how can it support economic development and accessibility? So, next slide. So, a very, very important component of designing a facility and planning one, and we take a very cursory look at your municipal lot site, and I'll kind of speak to that at the end, but it's really about, one, doing it on a very efficient site when you have the right geometry and width and length. So basically, every square foot of the structure is either a parking space or a drive aisle, and there's no kind of wasted space. So that's something that our firm looks at and we focus on, because parking facilities are cheap, they are, they're not cheap. And so you want to make sure you're utilizing every square foot that you can. The second thing that's been talked about is the facade. Obviously, you know, you have a beautiful community, somewhat low density in nature compared to, you know, other urban areas or urban areas, and it's important that they fit in to the design and the fabric of your community. Lastly, you know, again, use your comfort when you drive in, it's bright, it's scary, the stairwells and the elevators and the glass, so people are looking in and people are looking out, and they're not, you know, they're not hiding these cases, things of that nature. Another just thing is durability. Parking garages, and this is an important thing to consider. You know, I've been involved in a project that we're working on a garage that right now is 50 years old. So this is an asset that is going to be, you know, potentially in any community or your community 50, 60, 70 years if properly maintained. And again, talking about sustainability, one of the main issues that we're confined with, and we are have been incorporating in the garage, which is a sustainable issue, such as even car charging stations, solar arrays, you know, low efficient lighting, that type of thing, really reduce the economic or the sustainable impact of the facility. And one of the, you know, benefits of your site is obviously it's all impervious pretty much today, so you're not adding any more impervious surface potentially to the area. So. Next slide. So, you know, understanding, you know, that the density concern and the mass concern of the structure, you know, I just wanted to highlight a couple of facilities that we've done here that are lower height. The upper right is in the garage, that's in Delaware. The lower left is in Ridgewood, that is a grade 8 plus 3 supported levels. The lower right is the Milburn, and that had a grade plus 2 supported level, and the garage on the other right is Pennsylvania, again, that is like grade plus, it kind of on a varying site, so while this looks like 2 levels, there's another level on the other side. So this kind of gives you a little bit of a sense of a 3-level, 4-level garage, you know, Ridgewood, and I'll speak a little bit to that then on some other slide. Next slide. So again, you know, these are just some of the design considerations that are put into the garage specifically for safety and security. 1, open stairwell, 2, well-lit, 3, you know, finished off area. It's not just concrete where you can really kind of compose it, a feeling that these are comfort. We, you know, obviously locate stairwells and elevators in locations that are most proximate to destinations that, you know, have activity. There is also opportunities to incorporate other uses within the garage. Now, obviously, that would eliminate parking spaces, but depending on the location and connectivity to the downtown, there could be a small retail space, there could be a community space, there could be a public office space, and obviously, we design these types of other uses in the facilities on a regular basis. So not only do you have what we call passive security, you also have active security, CCTV, emergency call plus stations, you know, those types of things that again enhance the user comfort and safety. So, next slide. You know, our garage is not the only thing, and I think as the presentation really confirmed that you look for locations to add, you know, other branding opportunities, graphics, public art in certain places, just again to enhance the overall vibrancy and feel, so that it just doesn't look like a concrete warehouse space. So these are just a couple other examples. I think the presentation you saw earlier had some better ones, but these are just a few that we've done recently. Next slide. And I think it was really a good point about the mobility component. Now, you know, parking garages in many locales are more than just for vehicles. They're for bikes, they're for scooter locations, they're for integration of shuttle buses, you know, that type of thing. So, again, not saying that these are necessarily what is right, you know, contemplate a facility, but it's certainly, you know, the idea is maybe park once and, you know, and use other modes to get around town, be that walking, be that bicycle, be it scooters, you know, that type of thing. So, this is just a slide that kind of conveys that idea. And the other use, retail uses that can be used for also come through. So, next slide. So again, I thought it should be on sustainability, but obviously, you know, that's a heavy sort of garage you look at, and look at those opportunities. Garages cannot be LEED certified, but they are what's called heavy Park Smart certified, which is a subcategory of the LEED building council. But these are just, you know, and not saying that's necessary to gain that certification, but you do look at these types of opportunities again enhance the sustainability of the garage. And again, you know, EV charging stations, we're working with the municipality of New York that will likely store a good part of what they hope to be an electric fleet of their municipal vehicles within 10 years' time. And they're looking at this garage basically serving also as a fueling center for their vehicles. Photovoltaic array, again, they had a little bit of the height of the thing, but it can certainly power the entire facility, the garage, as far as its lighting systems and even support the EV charging stations as well. Next slide. So I think I just kind of giving you some overview of some of the planning considerations and design, but I think, you know, a lot of, in most towns and situations you're wrestling with, the first step that's off the table is a parking study to really understand what, you know, your existing conditions are. And obviously, I think the parking committee has done, you know, a lot of due diligence related to this. I know that they're looking at other opportunities to utilize maybe other parking assets, private parking assets. So this is kind of an important component to understand. And I think you heard a lot of the different things. You don't need any more parking. You have enough. You need more. And I think we come in and or a firm like us, and we inventory. You know, we divide a study area here. We inventory your public parking and maybe even more of your larger size private parking. And then we will, you know, kind of document the utilization over a couple of days. We'll come in, talk to you, what's a typical busy day, what's a typical busy weekend, and we will document and you know, all the utilization of those of that parking into the seas. And really pull, why does it pull, you know, all the different times. And the other thing that you get through that is you also understand a bit of the dynamic. You know, there's who the users are. Are they taking up space all day long, or maybe they should be, you know, regulated and moved out of the space so that one space maybe be able to be used by three or four people throughout the day. The other thing that we look at that I think is very important, and I think was mentioned as you've gone through this development, is that, you know, what is your future goal? You get a glimpse of what is today, but then you look at what's your five-year horizon, how much new developments are going to be, how much parking are they going to develop as part of that new development, if any. And one of the things that was mentioned, you talked about retail, the new retail being added for that, you know, and that's a typical standard, is four spaces per 1,000. But that's not normally a restaurant standard. And when, you know, with the dot-com world and, you know, a lot of our downtowns, and we're working in Westfield now, or working in Ridgewood, a lot of these downtowns have lost a lot more of their traditional retail and have gone for more service retail, especially restaurants and food, and they have a much higher parking demand than 4,000. They can be 10 to 12 spaces per 1,000 square feet, and account for employees, type of restaurant, and more of that type. So we project that future demand, and then we, you know, what we also do is what's the shared analysis. Obviously, there's opportunities to size, you know, future parking based on, not just on, you know, the amount of residential, the amount of retail, not only the amount of office, it's also, you know, some of these can share parking throughout the day, so you kind of reduce the overall amount that you may need. Next slide. The other thing, you know, that is very important is how parking is managed in the town. I mean, again, you do have a parking committee, which is a great, you know, a great thing to have, but you know, in a lot of smaller towns, you can't have a dedicated parking director like you have in New Brunswick or some of them were for larger urban centers. So Galway Center parking director is just an example. Red Bank has a parking director, Asbury. But in smaller towns, you can't always, you know, commit that level of resource. But what is very important is having a parking management plan, system, and making sure it is, it's kind of a one responsibility center, because in many smaller towns, you have police playing a role, you have public works playing a role, you have finance playing a role, and there's sometimes this desegregation doesn't create kind of the best, you know, management of the overall system. So that's the other thing that gets looked at in a parking studies, how do you manage it? And really the ultimate goal is to maximize the utilization of your existing assets. Again, it sounds like you've all taken a hard look at this already, but again, this is another component of the study that can be reviewed. Next slide. So kind of the culminating part of the parking study is then to say, okay, we've got an idea of what you may need, you know, be it today or in a 5-year timeline. And I kind of speak to 5 years because I think beyond that, it's you know, even estimating 5 years is difficult. Going out beyond that, I don't know how realistic it is. So then if you look at possible sites for a facility, and again, you're looking first at other options. Can you share private parking? And I know, listening to, you know, tonight, that's things that you're already looking at. Like, you know, can that be done? Because again, the cost of the structure is not insignificant, and you may want to look at all other options before you kind of start to choose and consider them. But you look at the site, and you want, you know, you look at a good site, and again, you do have I'm not a designer, I'm not an engineer or a planner, but I can tell you, you know, we have design specialists who would, you know, look at your site, lay out the most efficient facility here, again, looking to achieve the amount of parking that we would think would make sense, and, you know, looking at other things like, you know, is there an integration of other uses, where your destinations are, how is it going to be, how are you going to load in and out to reduce traffic impacts, you know, that thing. And then, you know, once we develop a site and a concept after the number of spaces, we would prepare for an order of magnitude cost estimate of what this garage the cost to design, build, and then operate. And, you know, based on that information, you know, we can even run a, you know, kind of debt service analysis to see what the debt service would be. And then, that's a very important part of this study, because many towns, like yourselves, say, you know, need a parking garage, it's one option, but it's really critical to understand, you know, what those costs would be to move forward. And it's important for every sector, you know, of your community, merchants, residents, as well as the leadership. So, next slide. So, we just did a quick little layout here. Again, if you have a good site, this is a very efficient footprint. You know, where there's no what we call speed ramps, where you're just using the ramp to access it, not go in. So this is a, you know, we do have a good site here. And then once, you know, once it was determined if it was amount of spaces, the amount of what levels, that type of thing. You could come up with this, you know, cost as a estimated cost. And, you know, today it's even more challenging because with, you know, kind of the construction world today and supply chain issues, you know, these costs are kind of up and, you know, mostly up, like, you know, everything else. So it's a good thing to assess. And then you also have our operations costs, you've got elevators, you've got tax costs, you've got lighting, utilities, you've got cleanup, you've got maintenance, you know, that kind of thing. And it's very important that a garage be really well maintained, especially if it's catering to, you know, as I said, as a gateway to your communities. We want to make sure it is well maintained. And then there's options, you know, financing. I don't know, you know, not, you know, many garages stand alone financially on in a smaller town when there is, and I don't believe in any parking, you know, fee parking. You know, typically, you know, there, so a parking garage and even more robust and active towns, you know, obviously you're really robust, I mean, so that, when there's already parking fees, parking garage, the fees collected, depends on the rate, obviously, is challenged to self-liquidate. So the next step is, all right, are there any other revenues, or parking revenues in the city? You know, like, in a town like Winchester, you've got the street meters and the lots, you've got the fees that you talk about that resident, you know, people pay to utilize or overnight parking, that type of thing. And then you look at this, you know, these products. And the one thing I can't recall if you talked about it, but in many New Jersey communities, there is what's called a payment in lieu of parking. So in those 50 residential units that got, you know, developed and wanted to use your municipal lot for, you know, to satisfy the parking requirement, in many towns they'll require that developer pay a lump sum capital fee for every parking space that they cannot provide. And that fee can range, I think, in the touch in, say, $5,000 per space to an Asbury, where I think their ordinance is $15,000 per space. So that pool of money goes to the municipality to help offset, you know, down the road, the development of a parking structure or any other type of downtown parking or transportation improvement. Doesn't have to be dedicated to a parking structure. And that fee is independent of the actual utilization fees. So if I was a tenant in that building and the developer paid $10,000, I would still have to pay the fee to use the actual use space. So these are some of the options that are available in some properties where a parking garage, municipal properties are being developed maybe with other uses such as residential. Sometimes there's tax ratable that is developed on the site that then can maybe go to offset some of the debt service associated with the garage. So the next thing. So that kind of wraps it up. You know, first of all, and I hope it, and obviously it was big, part of our comment was making a parking fund a good thing to have, you know, given the desire, and obviously in the town that you're doing some great development, great economic development, and you're not alone, and it's kind of a challenge, and the issues that you're facing. I mean, this garage that we did here in Ridgewood, when we did the World Times, when we talked about the public officials and the ribbon cutting, they honestly indicated that this garage had been discussed for probably over 50 years, and that you know, it finally came into fruition. So I just kind of close with that, you know, that these are challenging issues that we have to wrestle with, but you know, this is just an example of how long. We did a facility in downtown Hutch, and which may be familiar with, which is a huge service parking lot, obviously not the highest and best use, again, it probably took, you know, 30 to 40 years for them to have these discussions about developing that lot, not just as a parking lot, but also as other type of development. So with that, I think I've completed what, you know, I'm obviously available for any questions.
Yeah, Joe, if you could just hang around for a little bit, and we'll have a Q&A session at the end, okay?
Sure.
Thank you. Councilman Doherty.
Thanks, Mr. Fisher. I'll keep my comments brief. We've been going on a bit tonight. So I've been a member of council and a member of the parking committee for 55 days. I did the math. I've been to two meetings. So I am not as deeply versed on this issue as members of this committee are. I can report that this committee has greatly impressed me with the level of dedication and the level of detail and commitment that they've put into this issue. It's tremendous. I can also report, you know, prior to these, to joining this council when I was campaigning, I can agree with Mr. Fisher, this is a very subjective topic. I would hear from voters who say this is the number one problem we face. And I would hear from others who say it's not a problem at all. So I would just like lend my support behind the study to get this topic out of the subjective and into the objective. Let's get some data. Let's get some experts to look at this issue in a hopefully soon post-pandemic world. Can we model this? Can we look at our needs, look at our current usage, try to model what our needs may be in the next few years and see what we need to do. But with that, I would like to open it up to questions from members of the council.
Mr. Zula, what's the, is he still on?
Jim, you're still on, right?
Correct, yes. We have a question coming
out. I've got a couple questions. What's the average life expectancy of a parking garage?
Well, I think, I would say that well-designed as they are today, you know, we say, you know, kind of a mid, and well-maintained, because they are exposed to the elements and salt, salt air, and salt coming in stone, they have to be properly maintained. But I would certainly say, you know, 50 to 60 year life is certainly well achievable. Garage here in New Brunswick, probably the most, the busiest garage, that's currently available on Church Street across from the State House 85. It was built in 1985, so, and is in, you know, fine condition. That was, so that's 85, is 35 years, if my math is correct. And, you know, that garage is structurally sound, attractive, and they have another 35 years left.
I believe Mr. Fisher stated there's 117 spaces.
Yes.
So, and I think in one of your previous discussions, we thought we might go get three stories out there.
Well, again, it all depends on what the right size of the building is.
Sure.
And looking at the lot, the size of the perimeter of the lot, you know, a firm like CHA would figure out exactly how many levels we
need. Right. And I'm just doing quick math and thinking what an average spot would throw off a day in cash revenue over so many spaces over 20 years, what the recuperation of those costs would be. So
that is going to charge for parking.
Well, that's just it. For parking residents at $50 a clip for a pass, and then we're going to charge for another, you know, two stories of retail spaces. You know, and what does it throw up? $4, $5 a day? I don't know. You know, because you're not going to, you can't say that it's $10 to $15 a day it's going to throw up, but you're not going to always rent every single space.
What is the utilization, Jim, for an average, parking structure for a town of our size?
I'm sorry, what's the utilization of what?
A parking space in the garage. I mean, what is the utilization percentage that you base your sizing on?
Well, I mean, related to the sizing of the facility, you know, that would be looking at, you know, kind of what your existing demand is, what your utilization, what your future anticipate growth, to what extent that can be shared, and then, you know, see, you've got an existing 170 spaces that has to go back into the structure, and you kind of make a projection on that. Now, you know, obviously, there's no way to guarantee what that utilization is. So, I can't say what the average utilization is. The ideal is that the garage is used as much as possible. You know, be it a daytime use, an evening use, a weekend use, so that, you know, to be blunt, if you're going to generate revenue to cover it, you have to maximize its utilization for the greatest extent possible.
So, we've heard a lot of assumptions on costs and benefits. Do we have an idea of how much this feasibility study would cost to find out what that data is?
You hear that, Jim? Feasibility study costs?
Yeah, I think, I know I always hate to give you, but, you know, but I would say, you know, in the range of, you know, again, to do the inventory, the parking counts, analyze the existing parking operations, look at your future growth, do a shared parking analysis, do a report recommendations, and do a site feasibility study with the associated order of magnitude cost estimate, things of that nature. I would guess between $35,000 and $45,000.
And in full transparency, that's Mr. Zula's cost. That's his estimate. The council would have to do due diligence and get other quotes.
We'd go out to bid.
We'd have to put it out to bid.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, and conceivably, there are some firms that will come in half of that cost. And I think also, as a council and the finance committee looking at this in the future, one of the things we'd have to discuss is Mr. Zulu's outlined what could be part of that study. It's conceivable we could do a study that is more finessed, if you will, and more specific, more focused on what the specific needs are for our town and justifying doing a garage or, you know, if we wanted to expand it out and look at C Street patterns of our commuters that come in and out because that has an effect on our town, that could be something that could be included. So Mr. Zillow's got that just sort of rough thumbnail sketch of what a cost could be. We could conceivably come in at half of that too, depending on what we want to do.
And if I could just comment on that. So obviously, the extent to which you refine your anticipated scope of services will certainly affect, you know, what the cost is. And again, I'm a little bit uncomfortable giving a price without, you know, specifically looking at scope of services that a municipal and saying what is this magnitude. Finding a number. I'll just give you an example though that, you know, there's parking studies that are, you know, would be $100,000 and they can be, you know, less than what we quote. So again, it's certainly very significant. Obviously, you're a smaller town, it would certainly be down towards that lower end. I think the number that I indicated was reasonable, but again, like you said, if your scope is more refined, that number could potentially, you know, go down.
I'm wondering, after we spend millions and millions of dollars in the garage, and I'm not saying we don't need it, I think it'd be good, but what do we do when autonomous vehicles arrive and now it's useless? Are we going to build it with the future in mind? Because I think then it would be better to think ahead and build it so it could provide housing. In other words, don't cheap out on it. Build it so it can sustain something else, or else we're just throwing our money away. Because, you know, it's here already. We're almost here.
Yeah, right? I was exactly going to be saying that. Like, this feasibility study, does it, like, how long does a feasibility study take? I mean, typically, if you're talking like school boards or whatever, it's like almost a year. So would it take a year for us to know? Because between seasons, you know, the traffic patterns, preaching to the choir, that it changes. And now that COVID is like, hopefully everything's going to be going back to normal and going into the city. And so
these traffic patterns are going to be changing, and exactly what Steve said, you know, you look to the future, and a lot of younger people are Ubering everywhere, that the cars are going to be smaller, so the way that we move around is going to change. Would that be a part of that feasibility study? And last but not least, I always go for the grant writing. Would that be a part of, like, maybe something in there that the person, the planner, would know if we could get some money?
Yeah.
Always looking for money.
Yeah. I know we mentioned grants for, like, the artwork and stuff like that, but are there grants for,
like, you know, when you it is, like, federally, state, so
Jim, can you help us out with that?
I, you know, in my experience in this field of, you know, several decades more than I like, but I have not seen any sort of state or federal grant money specific. I think the only time there may have been was during after the Great Recession when they get the funding moved there that provided infrastructure for money. But beyond that, I have not seen grants specific to fund the construction of parking facilities. Now, there are, you know, a variety of economic development programs that support transit-type parking, maybe mixed-use economic development. So I do not know, but I do, you know, we work with grant solicitation entities that do public grant writing for public, you know, entities, and that can certainly be researched, you know, obviously.
Especially like electric cars. I mean, there's money up there for that.
Yeah, there's definitely money for electric charging stations. Mm-hmm. And, but the, so I think there, you know, the only thing that is a bit different now is with the federal state, you know, the money that it is flowing in, we're not exactly sure, you know, what that may be going to support, you know, but again, that due diligence can be done to speed that. And you know, one thing I just want to, you know, mention about autonomous vehicles, you know, in our history, it's been a discussion for 5-6 years, maybe longer, about what that impact will be. And it's varied. I think a lot of the data post-COVID, through COVID, indicates driving and vehicle ownership is up now more than ever. Now, Uber took a bit of a slowdown, not to say that, but won't come back. So we've done studies. We did one for Princeton University that comprehensively wanted us to study the cost to design a facility to be converted to another use. And ultimately, you know, the first level of the garage, just to give you what I know, is easily convertible. You can build it to a certain head height so that you can do another use. The upper left is a more challenging, and the footprint of a garage doesn't necessarily adapt well to other types of uses of residential and or commercial. So there is probably a 30 to 40% initial construction premium to build the garage to be 100% converted to another use down the line, and it's in many cases most people are unwilling to give, you know, the substantial cost of the garage and that premium to something that, you know, that may happen in the future. I would say I can't sit here and say will it happen, will it happen. I don't know, but I just want to give you kind of what I know and what our industry has wrestled with over the last several years.
And so how long does the feasibility want?
What time on the feasibility study?
I would say from the time, you know, again, and from the notice to proceed, I would say it would be a 4 to 5 month event. You know, to give you a full report, give you, you know, the analysis of your downtown, your operations, your other options besides parking facility, a new parking facility, then a site feasibility study, which is, you know, a line, like a site plan, and then the, you know, the financial analysis. So, you know, certainly within the outside of the environment, you can maybe get it done sooner than that.
Thank you.
So I've spent a lot of time with the parking committee these past couple of years.
Thank you very much for spending so much time with us.
And this is this is my second time hearing Mr. Zillow, but I've heard other experts. So I've been thinking about this for a long time and talking to other towns. I guess some of my questions are, as the mayor talked about timing, I'm not talking about timing in terms of length of study, but is this the right time to do a parking study in Atlantic Highlands? Because I've even seen, like, our housing stock has shifted. There's a bunch of new houses just went on the market in the past. Like, my old house that I used to rent just went on the market because about half the town sent it to me because I love that house. 102 East Mount's great house. But, you know, we don't know, like, our demographics are not, they seem very in flux right now. And we have had new businesses open on First Avenue. And I love the idea of innovative solutions to support our business district, because even if it's an idea from 20 years ago, it hasn't been implemented, it is still innovative at this point for our town. Some of my questions, though, are, like, every town that Mr. Zillow cited, the one that is closest to us in size is about 3 times the size of Atlantic Highlands. So I would love to know from him or from Doug, and I don't want to put Doug on the spot, and I didn't ask him in advance, but what other small towns of our size that, and similar structure with a commuting hub, have been investigating this? And have you seen any structures go up in towns of our size, or?
Stop with Doug.
I'm looking at Doug.
Not that I can think of anything.
And you're not, are you working on any projects right now where there's any kind of feasibility study for any towns of any size on parking?
Not out of my building. I can gladly ask around for the whole firm, representing many municipalities. So
I bug you all the time. Sorry. Mr. Zillow, are you working on any current? I know you said Asbury Park was on hold.
Garage. We did this garage. The town, I can tell you that the town of Hudson, New York, on the Hudson River, has just put out an RFP for a new parking study. Very similar scope of service and that I kind of outlined here. They're a town, I think, of 7,000. They have a big summer influx of, you know, it's kind of a weak surge in Hudson Valley town, so that's one that you just put one out. We've done studies, you know, again, I don't know exactly the population of Atlantic Highlands, but we've done studies.
About 4,300.
Yeah.
4,300 and change.
So, obviously, I can mention the cities, but the towns, but they're all probably larger than, you know, 4,000 people. But we're doing a parking garage design right now in New Hope, Pennsylvania. So I don't know the exact population there. It's probably fairly similar. But again, it's a significant destination town, and that's driving their need. Princeton is obviously a bigger town where we've done work. We've done work in Union Township. They're seeing a lot of doing a fairly small downtown, but they're seeing a lot of new development that's causing parking problems.
I appreciate you giving as many examples as you have. I'm not against us doing a traffic study. I'm in favor of us doing an RFP, but also really looking at what the cost would be, because we cut stuff from the budget this year. I didn't vote for this year's budget because there were things that got cut from it because we needed to stay as close for our residents as possible, and we cut some things that needed to happen. And now we have a huge additional expense with the first aid that we don't know if that's going to be rectified this year. So I just want us to be super careful, and the finance committee have a real serious conversation about what the cost would be, but the timing of what this would be, because if it's not appropriate timing, if we don't get to the normal, whatever that is, and, you know, I really take to heart what Mr. Barakia said about innovations in technology and where we're going with that, but I also, you know, I hear what our business owners are saying. I spent a lot of time with Mr. Sherman and his store talking about, you know, when the movie theater comes fully back, you know, what's that going to mean for, you know, and that's really important to us because we're all really happy that the movie theater has reopened. And that was a significant cause of challenges for parking. So I would also ask, this is my last question, does a feasibility study, is there a way for it to get to, and I had a conversation today with somebody who I'm very, very close to, who told me that I was talking about walking a block and how, like, the challenge of walking a block is a deterrent to people thinking that we have a parking problem in Atlantic Highlands. I'm not saying we don't have a parking problem. I'm open to hearing about it, but that same person told me that parking in the municipal lot was too far for them because they have, you know, there weren't enough spots for people with disabilities on First Avenue, and so for that person, it was going to be difficult to walk that block. You know, does a feasibility study get to the willingness of residents? Actually, I had dinner with Sarah last night, Paul Cerdo, and we were talking about having, like, maybe a wellness campaign to get people to walk more in town so that we could help find other. So do feasibility studies for parking structures or parking in general address any of that?
I think what they, you know, yeah, what they, what you look at is what your parking resources are in the town and how close they are to destinations. And you get it, I mean, they're 100% away. If something is, you know, 500 feet away, but it's, you know, from where people want to go, you know, when people go and park in a mall, they're generally more than probably 500 from, you know, a busy mall in old days anyway. So yes, perception, and sometimes a parking problem is more perception than reality. And, you know, so yes, you know, if there is available resources within what is defined as a reasonable walking distance, that will be identified. And ultimately, you know, maybe there's things that have to improve the accessibility to those lots, the lighting, the walk, you know, the comfort, you know, that type of thing, or even the communication that these additional assets exist. You know, sometimes towns, you know, don't necessarily promote through wayfinding, through signage, through communications, via internet or social media, or what other options are available. And that's certainly kind of the strategy to look at your overall parking system, and how you manage it, and what there is, and how you promote it, to maximize every space you can before taking a look at,
no, I appreciate that, and that's good to hear that would be covered in a parking study. So, you know, I think if we can, in fairness to the public and our business owners, that I would like to see us investigate what the costs would be associated with a parking study, and that we make sure that when we do the RFP that we include those kind of considerations in that, and if we can work it in, I know we'll try.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing I would recommend, this goes off of a little bit on what I was saying, a little bit of what Jim was saying in his presentation, and Laura, a little bit of, about your anecdote there. I would, and this may be more nomenclature, so Jim, yell at me if this is just semantics, but I would really consider this more of a mobility study than a parking study. And I think that's an important distinction simply because while parking obviously is a critical part, to your point, Lori, how are people getting around at all? How are they coming in and out? What do they do when they're here? And what are the assets that allow for moving from point A to point B? And to me, that also has an important distinction in terms of what does it mean for the overall ability to drive new visitors, new residents, new businesses, in terms of how they get around? Of course, parking is a critical part of that, but I look more expansively in terms of the mobility kind of nomenclature, as part of the decision making for the community.
I will adopt that language. Thank you.
You know, that is an excellent statement because, believe it or not, there are these parking associations worldwide, and mobility is a huge component of, you know, the space now. So it's parking and mobility. There's a lot of examples where in a lot of the towns that we do studies, we look at what alternative transportation options there can be in a cost-effective manner. So that's certainly a component of an analysis as well.
Oh, would a parking garage in the municipal lot cure those mobility issues? People that are having issues getting to First Avenue businesses.
And Council, let me answer, if I can give you my thought on that.
Please.
Because I think most people know here on the dais, I had surgery on my left foot, and as of a week ago, I've ruptured my Achilles tendon in my right foot. So, as I was saying to the councilwoman, for me, most of my shopping is going to be in the central business district and the historic business district. When I hear people say about, like, let's try to get people to park down by the harbor or park on the other end of First Avenue, that's not really an option for me right now. And I think about our residents who are seniors or other people that, you know, born with some limitations, or like me, have had an accident. You know, for me to park down by 7-Eleven and walk over to Cunha, and so by having parking a deck right there in the municipal lot and adding spaces goes a long way to helping our businesses and our residents who've got business right in this area, as opposed to, you know, the opposite ends of the street. So I think it does. That's where you want the parking to be located.
It does if you're comparing it to the harbor and 7-Eleven. What I'm talking about is right in that business district. If the parking structure is right behind First Avenue, you still have a distance. So, I'm just asking as far as mobility, and it's a good point.
A much shorter distance for me to walk through, or somebody in a wheelchair with a walker or crutches or a cane to walk through Edwards Alley, and boom, you're right there at Bob Sherman's store, or you're getting your ice cream at Nicholas, or you've seen a movie. So that's the most centrally located area that's going to be the most benefit, I should say, to residents.
No, that I'm not discounting. I agree with that. But I'm just saying, as far as efforts, I think when we approach this and why you have such a difference in opinion in town is some see this as a want and some see this as a need. And I think understanding the need of this is important to those that don't see it as that. And if we're talking about mobility as a cause for the need, I'm just asking, does this really address that need?
It's a part of, right? That addresses one. That's one on-ramp, if you will, for the problem. And the other problems are just making it easier for people to go to our restaurants and our businesses that are in the central or historic business district. Those are the other on-ramps.
Okay.
I was just going to say in closing, Mayor, and I also just want to address something that Steve said about...
Can I just say
something? Yeah, go ahead.
A lot of public comment.
Not
no.
Tonight.
Okay. In terms of the autonomous vehicles, you know, anecdotally, when I was working at the network, we used to think about storytelling for millennials versus boomers or Gen Xers, right? And at the end of the day, we realized, well, it's just really about telling a good story. It doesn't matter what age you are. If you like the characters in the story, it's all good. With the autonomous vehicles and younger generations, I think studies are showing that younger folks, when they're in a bigger city, they use Uber a lot. When you move out to the suburbs, there's still Uber usage, but it's not the same as when you're in a big city like Boston or LA or New York. And eventually what happens is just this human sort of desire for mobility. When you get a little older and wanting to get in a car and go someplace whenever you want to go, it just manifests itself. And so, as Mr. Zullo said, car buying is up because people, especially while we're in the pandemic, when we get out of it, just whatever age you are, you want the ability that's an American way of life. You want to go when you want to go. And I'll just say in closing here that when the idea of a parking garage first surfaced, I think the price tag was about $2 million. And then it got tabled for about 5-6 years, went up to $5 million. And now, even though I don't think we addressed it directly tonight, I think what we're looking at for the size of a garage is somewhere about the neighborhood of $8 million. So I won't belabor the point. I think the point is clear that the parking committee would like the council to do an RFP, get some estimates for a parking study, and I think the parking committee would also like to suggest to council that if council wants to do a referendum at some point, if a parking study supports it, and put it out to the neighbors, our neighbors, to see if they want to go through and bond for a garage, that's an approach that we should think about, or the committee would like us to think about.
Okay.
could I ask that the parking committee maybe, you know, before we go to an R, you know, look into an RFP, find out what some neighboring towns are getting on average for parking spots? You know, I mean, I know what it costs if we do pay for parking, but what's the average spot generate? Is it $4 a day? Is it $6 a day? Yeah, because if we're talking 117 spaces out there, we're not going to get 117 spaces in a parking garage. You're going to have to take at least 80% of that just because of the structure itself, the pillars, the columns, the ramps, and so forth. So at that point, you're less than 100 spaces. If there's 110, I believe, was the number you said as far as permits?
Overnight, yes.
Overnight, so 110. So we take that number out, we're left with roughly about 180 spaces for $6 a day. They maybe generate, you know, per space. Figure that out over 365 days a year, you're 400 to 600,000 a year. It's going to take you 20 years to pay off that $8 million. So, you know, maybe we could look into that a little bit further, see what an average space generates before we go to RFP and find out if we want to wait 20 years to recoup our money. And that's just recouping the money without interest. So,
you know, the rates are soaring. So
yeah, I mean, the inflation right now, I don't know what the bar we get is off the top of my head, but it's not going to come down anytime soon, I foresee. So if it's going to cost us $8 million to build by the time we borrow, maybe it costs us $14 to $16 million over term. Just a thought to ponder.
So maybe it sounds like we can discuss this
sounds
further.
Like the end of that mansion.
A little later on.
Well, I want to thank you, Mr. Fisher, and your committee for a thorough, thoughtful presentation and workshop. And you can clearly see that we have a lot to discuss. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So. There will be a lot to discuss at every step in this process as we move through. I'd like to just thank Jim Zullo again. He's still on. Jim, thank you for talking to our committee, supporting our effort, giving us great advice over the last year and a half or so. Still haven't met the man in person, but someday we are going to have lunch or dinner in Atlantic Islands, right, Jim?
Yeah, well, I look forward to that. Thanks for, you know, wish you all luck with whatever direction you go. And look forward to from the Atlantic Islands and having a nice meal sometime.
Okay.
Thank you. Great job. Everybody. Great job. Everybody. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks. Okay. Now, Mr. Romeyer, it's going to be public comment. It is on the agenda items only. If you're on the Zoom meeting, you raise your hand, of course, and or nine if you're on the phone. And I'm going to start with the people up here and then move to Zoom. So, is there anyone that has any questions or comments on the agenda items only?
Do you have any people online?
Mrs. Keelan is just passing out. I had thought Mrs. Egidio was going to be here in person, 18? So this was something she was going to speak to. It's just the checklist for the Garden for Wildlife item. So that's what Mr. Keelan's doing.
Okay, so since I see no hands up, I'm sorry.
About what we just talked about?
No.
Oh, no.
Just on the consent agenda, what we'll be voting on.
Oh, okay.
Thanks. It does, yes.
I didn't know the Messia thing was going to be here, but I just wanted to mention, I get really, really anxious thinking about the adult spreading, the fact that people would be inside and walk the dogs, and I just think that that's not really dangerous, and I hope that any consideration of what that she was trying to get past to go through the environmental commission, and she was trying to bring things in, right?
And those only if it's an emergency.
It's for only emergency purposes.
So, yeah. Would that, whether or not we pass it,
I don't believe it will. It's because it's an emergency, so it's right. Like basically county. It's a
county.
It's a county.
It's a county. talk that
right. That's what she said, yeah.
Right, so I just probably advocate that we would also do that, so we know a little bit more about that. I know that the water side process has been going on since the current 1914, but we also know that since 1914, the native bird population has been funded. So, she's still here, so I could ask her some questions about if there could be any relation between those things. Obviously, everyone hates mosquitoes, nobody wants to see them in their backyard, but mosquitoes are an integral part of food chain. Mosquitoes don't exist in the birds and other insects, so there has to be some sort of middleman here.
I think as an employee of the county, I think you might be able to reach out to her to ask any and all questions you might have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. What's that? The birds? Are you talking about the birds?
Even if it is an emergency, we know that can't.
Not yet, she said. Not yet.
So why would we commit to now?
It's only if there was West Nile actually active, she said.
Mm-hmm.
So if people were actually getting sick, because I wouldn't want to see it either, right? But if people were actually getting sick and it might...
They test, and it's only the one area, the dredge pit, and that they test the water there. And that's what she said.
That's the east side of the marina. It sounds like it's pretty remote, although I agree if it happens, we should know, but it sounds like it's a very remote thing. Which is kind of how I'm...
I just get really nervous about the idea of waiting for something else in the future that don't know what's going to happen. It's not something that's necessarily right now, so I don't know if the rush is.
We've passed this...
Last year.
Mm-hmm.
Every year we've been...
We got notified if they were doing this.
So this is...
Well, that's because it's only if it's an emergency.
Right, so
but
she's talking about having to put people inside and make sure people are walking around.
But she also said that they do it late nights and early mornings when most people are inside and your native mosquitoes, your native flies and other insects are bees. I think it's what she was talking about, bees.
That's what she said. She said that they spray generally this comes up every year, and it's the spraying, if it occurred, would be between midnight and 4 or 5 in the morning.
Right.
So when people, when the population's not out.
But that's what's when the mosquitoes are.
But I know we're doing a lot of our certification, so I just want to make sure that
the company is going to react
to
that. Okay, thank you. Yes?
Hello, Sarah Calasoto, 20 East Island. I am, with regards to the mosquito control, I actually spoke to Victoria today. It was just kind of on my mind. I didn't even realize that she was going to be here until I was talking to her. So it was a nice coincidence. But so the resolution, or the resolution, is for the FAA, for CRISA, so if they don't have to be below in an emergency situation. There is also truck spraying during an emergency, which this resolution is not for,
That's correct.
And that would be, she told me about the chemicals that they would use for that, and they're Clark Duet and Central Research Scientist Zenovex. I looked at both of those in the safety data sheets, and there is toxicity to bees and aquatic organisms in runoff and birds. And I just bring this up because through Clark, which has the product Duet, Clark also has a product within their public health services mosquito control product line called MIRIS 3.0, which is listed under the Organic Materials Review Institute, and it's acceptable for use on organic gardens and farms and crops, and a lot of folks have organic gardens in their yards, and also we are going for this wildlife sort of certification for the town. And so I think that it could be worth a further conversation about, maybe trying to encourage the county to look into.
Mm-hmm. She said that the product that she uses is Vector Prime, so it's a different
that's
than what you're...
Yes,
and that's what we're voting on.
Right, I'm just saying that that's not the only spray. They don't only do that spraying, and that's not the only chemical that they use.
Well, that's not what she said tonight. She said that it was just the Vecto Prime for the aerial, and that's what we're voting on tonight. Okay.
Right, so...
But you're saying to look over, okay.
Also, truck spraying would be in an emergency situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to make that clear.
Okay.
There's also that kind of customer.
All right, thank you. Now, okay, can we go to,
First member, on Zoom is, Mr. Sheridan.
Hello?
Hi there. It says Michael Sherman, but it's me, Marilyn Sherman.
Oh, hello.
Hi, I'm happy to see.
Mm-hmm.
Good evening, everyone.
Hello.
Hi. Elena Gidio and I are both very excited that the wildlife certification resolution is being introduced tonight. And thanks to Councilmember Hohenlein here for her work in doing this. We hope you on the council will be equally excited and vote in favor of it.
Mm-hmm.
There are several words I'd like to share about the program. First of all, habitat health and sustainability. Gardens of any size throughout town can make a lasting difference for wildlife, such as bees and songbirds, because they can provide resources for them to survive, thrive, and reproduce. Health and protection for nature becomes, in turn, health and protection for ourselves. Then there's a collaboration. First, it's a collaboration with nature, but it's about building a community spirit with groups and organizations in town working together for a common good. The environmental, the shade tree, recreation, sustainable New Jersey, commissions with the Open Space Committee, Garden Club, the Arts Council, schools, churches, and others, businesses, and maybe even the parking committee, it sounds like, would see some of the design there. There's an awareness that comes with this program. Outreach and education are part of it. It's fun, enjoyable, and popular. Just ask the 27 of our residents who already have a certified habitat. Recently, I just attended a webinar about tending nature in which there were over 10,000 participants. People want to know how each of us can help our environment. And it's easy. With minimal effort, just by adding water, shelter, native plants, and sustainable practices in our gardens, both public and private, Atlantic Highlands outdoor space can be transformed into a more welcoming place for birds, butterflies, and people. We think this resolution, is a win-win for the environment and the town, and we thank you.
Oh, thank you. It was really nice to hear from you.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here.
Okay, thanks. Anyone else?
Good evening, this is Eleni Tadillo, A1 West Highland Avenue. As Marilyn said, we are very excited that this resolution has come in front of you, Mayor and Council, and really appreciate you supporting this resolution. As a community, we will be creating in our yards, patios, churches, and municipal areas places that pollinators and wildlife will find food, water, and shelter. And we will be part of a more sustainable New Jersey, a more sustainable United States, more sustainable world. As Marilyn said, there's already 27 certified wildlife habitats homes in Atlantic Highlands. So we actually, as you can see, I believe that you have some paperwork there and it has some point systems. That we will have to go through as a community. 27 homes means we are over 25% of the amount of homes we need to have certified. So we're on our way. We really believe that this will benefit our community. We'll be educating our citizens and our children that co-creating this natural world is beneficial to all of us. We have a Facebook page up already. We will be posting information and ways for you to become certified and ways to help in the certification process. We will be asking the community to come and join us there. We'll be having educational seminars. We'll be posting information down at the farmer's market. And I just thank you so much for having us here this evening, and I look forward to us all working together to make Atlantic Highlands a wildlife habitat, and we're all certified together. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
One more, Mr. Bryan. Ms. Bryan, can you hear us?
Hello?
That's the last member of the public who hand raised at this time.
She muted?
Muted on the other side.
Ms. Fratton, you have to unmute yourself.
Give it a minute. Are there any other hands raised, Doug?
Not at this time.
Well, for anybody with their hand raised, you have to unmute to talk. Mayor, I guess we can. The person isn't going to participate, okay. Then we'll just move on to the consent agenda.
Okay. So, this is the consent agenda. These items will be enacted by one motion. If detailed deliberation is desired on any item, council may remove that item from the consent agenda and consider it separately. Resolution 45, supporting certification as a community wildlife habitat. I heard some people talk on that. Resolution 46, authorizing the Monmouth County Mosquito to conduct aerial operations. Resolution 47, authorizing use agreement for the Hess Parish Center. Resolution 48, authorizing reassignment of the Recreation Secretary duties to McLean. Resolution 49, authorizing reassignment of finance clerk position to Ms. Clark. Resolution 50, Sustainable Jersey PSEG grant. Resolution 51, Municipal Alliance grant, Form 1B. Resolution 52, authorizing CME to renew the NJPDEF service discharge permit. Resolution 53, authorizing CME to prepare annual DEP stormwater report. Resolution 54, amending resolution 14-2022 appointments. And resolution 55, payment of bills $186,086.02.
Mayor, I don't know if it needs to be pulled, but resolution 052, I have a couple of questions to ask.
Okay. Let's pull that.
This is not how it is listed in the actual resolution, but resolution 47, I just don't want to authorize the Monmouth County Mosquito to conduct aerial operations. I think that they're free to do so, the mosquitoes, but and I don't know if there's one designated one, but
I believe you mean 46, right?
It's 46. I'm sorry, yeah. So it's Monmouth County Mosquito Control Division to conduct aerial mosquito.
As opposed to one sellout mosquito.
Yeah, he'd be a traitor.
But I'd like to pull that one separate from the rest of the agenda.
Okay. Okay, so we're voting on everything besides 46 and 52. So I need a motion and a second.
Friendly moves. Friendly seconds.
Ms. Clark, did you get that?
Got it.
Okay. Roll call.
Mr. Murphy.
Yes.
Ms. Hohenleitner?
Yes.
Mr. Dougherty?
Yes.
Mr. Crowley?
Yes.
Mr. Barakia?
Yes.
Mr. Brahms?
Yes.
Items on the consent agenda have passed.
Okay, so Resolution 46, authorizing the Monmouth County Mosquito conduct aerial operations. I need a motion and a second.
I'll move it, ma'am.
And a second?
Second.
Okay, and discussion?
I'm just personally uncomfortable. I'm not going to vote for it. I'm uncomfortable moving forward this other effort and voting for this in the same day. So that's the only reason.
Right. I mean, I know we're understanding that we're talking like a concern, but is there, we do this every year for a reason, correct? Because there's a need for this, we do every year.
It's me personally doing this other effort, so I'm not trying to talk anybody into
anything. No, I'm just addressing the council. We're discussing this, so.
I'm in the same place as Councilwoman Hohenleitner, and what I was going to suggest is, I see Mr. Deacon is here. I was going to suggest that our environmental committee could meet to discuss, go through what chemicals are involved in these sprays. And I think there's the one issue of we're looking at an emergency spray only, which is what this resolution is about. And then there's a whole other suite of chemicals that are used for other situations. And I would love to hear people from our own town weigh in on this from our environmental commission.
This is just for the...
Totally understand. Okay, I totally understand, but applicants. I can't separate. It's hard for me to separate them both. In terms of, I would like a learned opinion on all of these things. There's the emergency spray and the chemicals that are used for that, and maybe the environmental commission says, you know what, if there's an emergency, given what this chemical is, and it's okay for organic farming and based on anecdotal evidence, we're okay with saying to the council, our recommendation is to go ahead with this. In regard to some of these other sprayings that are done for other situations, we would say to mayor and council, maybe you pass another ordinance, separate ordinance that says, we don't want to use this and we don't want to use this, but we're okay with this and this. Is make your recommendations of what you think we should or should not go forward with. And I think we can break it all up. They may very well come back and say, the emergency spraying is fine by us. We think it's okay.
We really don't have that much time. They have to have it. It's a time.
2 weeks? Also. Can we put a deadline on it?
I think we need to discuss. Yeah. Last year we talked about it, and the spray, it's a half ounce per acre. And it immediately disintegrates, breaks down. So, and the idea is they do it at times when other insects and wouldn't be around on a natural. And it's based off the chrysanthemum flower, so it's derived from a natural product. Of course, when you synthesize things in a lab, it does change them. I know that from my own work. But it doesn't sound, and it's EPA approved, you know, and it's safe for children. Not that I want to have my kid running around under it, but
this last year.
Yeah, we did. And so after we went through that, we kind of came to the conclusion it was okay. You know, it wasn't maybe not the best of things, right? None of this is ever going to be the best, because it's all, the only way you stop this is with chemicals of some kind. I'm not in favor of it either, in a sense, but I also realize that you have to do something. So you have to have the least impact, negative impact. And I think that was thought through based on the discussion last year and some of what on the Duet and some of the other products. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of one of those things where, you know, I don't think it's ever going to be perfect. And your option is maybe not to do anything, and then people are going to be miserable all summer. So in fact, that it's, you know, the spray is a rare, sounds like it's a rarity, and I think, would we be notified?
That's what you said.
Right. So we could at that time, you know, if we wanted to say, you know, wait, maybe we don't want this, so we have all other information. You know, if we could stop it, then. But it sounds like the risk versus the reward is pretty small. The risk is pretty small.
I'm totally in favor of the environmental committee doing some more research and homework. I do think that it makes sense to vote on this today and pass it. And if the environmental committee has issues, they come up with you know, higher risks and revisiting it. I don't see us having an emergency situation in the next 2 weeks where this is actually going to happen.
I deem it to be a low risk. And as you said earlier, we've looked at this last, we've looked at this in previous years, and this isn't a new thing. This is, the risk isn't new. We've looked into the risk, and we've all, you know, voted on it in the past. So
I'd be up for having him look at it, and then, you know, and if we did have it, we'd rescind it, I would think, right?
Well, all I want to say is, I mean, I'm on the Environmental Commission. I completely agree with the concerns that are being expressed. It's inopportune timing that it appears on the same consent agenda as the.
The only reason was because I really wanted her to come in.
Sure. Of course. No, understood. But I question the timing as well. I mean, we're getting closer to springtime. Mm-hmm. This larvicide that happens every year in this mm-hmm. limited area likely needs to happen soon. That's what I'm hearing, is that we have a timing issue. The Environmental Commission just met 2 months ago. So we would have to, and I wouldn't even know if this is possible, we'd have to call a special meeting.
Right.
We'd have to notice a special meeting to discuss this. If we do have the ability to veto, if the county says we want to come in and, mm-hmm. you know, spray the entire town or something like that, if we would have the opportunity to say, we'll slow down, or request mm-hmm. the other chemical, the more organic chemical, mm-hmm. That could be a compromise. But I wouldn't want to jeopardize the timing issue, and, you know, especially when it's so limited.
Do we have anybody at the state? I mean, I would think, you know, being in New Jersey, I would think we're pretty strict on this. I would hope there's somebody we could reach out to at the state level who would be an expert on this.
Right.
That could just tell us flat out, you know, answer the questions.
It was also brought up last year.
Where would? Uh-huh. Yeah, we did. I mean, we went through this last year also, but
it's a further discussion.
We had the same concerns. You know, it's really
reasonable concerns.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah,
we're talking about chemicals.
I mean, nobody wants to be sprayed with
no
chemicals.
Bring back the bats.
So. Well, how do we find out? I mean, the Environmental Committee, would you be able to do that within the week? Or?
I believe so. I mean, we could reach out to some of our contacts, some of the various organizations, and mm-hmm. try to find out. But I think I'm in agreement with Councilman Murphy that, you know, we should proceed because of the timing issue, and then while we do our due diligence, and we could revisit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we can pull it. We could rescind it if we get something we don't like.
Yes.
Right. We can do that, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Let's do that then.
All right. So, I have a motion and second. So now roll call.
Mr. Murphy?
Yes.
Mr. Enlightner?
No.
Mr. Dougherty?
Yes.
Mr. Crowley?
No.
Mr. Barakia?
Yes.
Mr. Bombs?
Yes.
Resolution 46 is passed.
Thank you. And so now, resolution 52, I need a motion and a second.
Crowley moves.
Dr. Seth.
Okay.
Doug, I just had just a few questions about this because I didn't see it in the paperwork. So just curious about how much we're talking about, how often we're talking about the discharge. Is there a notification? Is it only water that's getting discharged, or is there other sort of runoff involved with this? Why do we need it?
Good question. The borough produces its own drinking water at the water treatment plant, and the water is harvested from wells, groundwater. Goes through, it's treated in various ways. One of the ways that the groundwater is treated before it's put into the system is a filtration method, something like you would see at a typical residential pool, right? Like a pool filter. The filters are required to be backwashed periodically so they can remain effective. The permit that needs to be renewed is currently in place. It's a five-year permit issued by the DEP for this specific activity for the borough. It's set to expire in September. They want the renewal documents in place 6 months prior to the expiration, so that brings us to the end of March, is the time when all the renewal work needs to be submitted to the state. And basically what
the permit renewal application package consists of these, exactly the things that you're asking. We'll compile the testing that's been done on the water, on the backwash discharge itself, the frequency, and specifically what's in it, so to make sure that it's appropriate to discharge to the creek. So it's basically the housekeeping item that needs to be done at this time, and there's no change to the current operations that are proposed. It's just renewing the existing application.
Permit.
Great.
Thank you.
No problem.
I have no further.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Now we need a roll call.
Mr. Murphy?
Yes.
Ms. Hohenleitner?
Yes.
Mr. Dougherty?
Yes.
Mr. Crowley?
Yes.
Mr. Barakia?
Yes.
Mr. Bombs?
Yes.
Resolution 52 has passed.
Okay, thank you. So now I need reports.
Yes, it's me. Thank you, Mayor. Mm-hmm. I will start with DPW. Repairs have been made to the Lenape Woods Trail and Bridge. I think some of us may have noticed that out there. Both pickup will be on Saturday, March 5th for zones 2 and 3, and Saturday, March 12th for zones 1 and 4. Reminder that metals can be dropped off at the yard on Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 4 p.m. If you would like metals to be picked up at your curb, you must contact Borough Hall by Thursday, end of the day, to schedule a curbside pickup. I believe they get picked up on Fridays. The next zone-by-zone scheduled brush pickup is not starting until April. Brush cannot be at the curb at this time. It can be dropped off at Borough Hall at the Borough Yard, excuse me. Do not drop it off at Borough Hall. At the Borough Yard, Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 4 p.m. The entire borough will have a safety inspection next week. Repairs have been made to the utility hydrant in the borough yard this week. The water and sewer department have been very busy with markouts and winter weather protection. We are waiting on the delivery of a new sanitation truck. Hopefully we'll have that by April. The sewer check valve has been installed in Borough Hall. And to all of our residents, we ask you please refer to the borough calendar for all schedules and borough information. Any issues or concerns, please call Jimmy Phillips at 848-444-0067. DPW. As far as I'll leave police for Councilman Bombs or Councilman Dougherty. Where am I at here? Rec meeting. So discussions were had about the townwide garage sale. That process is starting, that planning process, as well as the Easter egg hunt. That's in discussion. Location was looking to see if we can move it, but it looks like that location may remain in Fireman's Field. We are looking to replace a few members. What's that? No, just some people that are stepping down or not active in the recreation committee, and they're stepping down. There was talk about comedy night. I will leave that for Councilman Crowley. I'm sure he's excited to talk about that, as well as the 5K run. And also, conversations have begun regarding our summer recreation program, the director, and the procedures therein. We also have some cool stuff going on at the harbor, which I'm sure Mr. Crowley would like to talk about, regarding some bands and some live entertainment. Exciting stuff coming that way. As far as first aid, not a whole lot to discuss on first aid. We did receive some new tablets, some minor issues which are being worked out, some minor glitches, but definitely appreciated and a benefit to the squad. Thank you to the county for that. As far we had a new EMT who passed his national EMT test. A big shout out to Mr. Timothy Farkas, our newest EMT on the squad. Well done, Timmy. And lastly, a discussion has had about a new program that the squad is looking to implement, hopefully to recruit new members and retain some current members. And that's about it for me.
Thank you.
It's the last meeting of the month, so. So obviously we made a major personnel decision as a council last week, hiring Mr. Chief Reiner now to be our police chief. All of us are very excited about it, and you know, we're really, the future of the department is very, very bright, and you know,
Chief Rossback, I look forward to his lockout tomorrow. I'm sure they'll talk about that more, but we're in really good hands, and I think we all really feel that way. And every single officer who interviewed for the position wowed us, every single one of them. So it was a really great experience, and thank you, Ms. Pergina, for running that process. In the harbor, the only thing, so we'll meet Tuesday, but I neglected to mention last time that Film One Fest had applied, so we will have a Film One Festival this summer, which is great. Open space, we've talked about a lot, but I think members of the public, we handed out those checklists if you wanted to. A lot of people could just, they already meet those items in their gardens right now and could be additional certified wildlife habitats. So we're looking also to be kind of a hub as the Open Space Committee for coordination between, we've got members of the Green Team here, the Environmental Commission, I see Mayor Harmon, who has contributed a lot to conversations with both Shade Tree and Open Space. So this is now like looking to be like a hub effort for all, including the school. It was Northbrook left, but we've been talking to the school about having that be a site and places of worship in town, you know, the police department, and every little bit of space that we have, how can we improve that to be pollinators? And Eleanor Dwyer, who's chairing the Green Team, has already put in a grant for something that would help us qualify. So it's a lot of it's about documentation and letting us know when you do something or when you're in compliance, or if a group, a Cub Scout group or the Girl Scouts, you know, any of the other organizations in town, nonprofits, the Leos, that there's a whole bunch of community-facing efforts that can be done through this, and we're really excited to get that started, and I want to thank Elaine and Marilyn for bringing it to me. A lot of people are excited about it. The Green Team met, but I was accidentally left off the invitation, so I don't have a report on that. I don't know, Rob, was there anything from that, the Green Team meeting?
I'll discuss it in my...
Okay, thank you. And then, just in terms of seniors, Ms. Spicer and the mayor and I have had some communication about some of the ideas that we brought forward, and we are looking to move those forward and have to have a meeting with Mr. Senna about a couple of them. And then finally, after last meeting's cannabis workshop, which it was, thank you very much to everyone who came and spoke their mind and gave us advice. Mr. Brachia, Mr. Krause, and I had a brief meeting just to talk about next steps. So we're not halted, we're continuing to discuss and have some ideas to talk to the public about again. Yeah?
Basically, yeah.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry, and the last thing, I ran into Mrs. Louise Donahue yesterday at the library, and the service for Mayor Donahue will be on March 26th at Shore Casino. I didn't get the time yet, but March 26th will be the day for that. Thank you.
Okay. Fire and EMS, the Mayor's EMS Task Force, chaired by Art Winley, will convene their first meeting in the next week or two, so we'll get underway there. 23rd. Great. Thank you. Councilman Murphy and I called a meeting with Fire Marshal Hawley, DPW Superintendent Jim Phillips, and Street Supervisor Roger Trent to discuss best approaches to ensure timely snow removal around hydrants. We discussed some options, and we're looking at launching an Adopt a Hydrant initiative here in town for implementation later this year, so we can get some sign-up sheets out to the public and encourage families to adopt their local hydrant to make sure the snow is removed. But more details will follow on that. Planning Board has not met since our last meeting, so the Planning Board will next meet on Thursday, March 3rd, 7 p.m. via Zoom. Details available on ahnj.com. Environmental, we've talked a bit about environmental already tonight, but the EC met on Tuesday, a couple of days ago. Rose Lenoff, the Business Development Manager for Cities and Government from Flow, gave a detailed and informative report on the topic of municipal EV chargers, which included a discussion of possible locations, funding sources, different types of chargers available, opportunities, etc. I was encouraged in our conversation about parking structures, thinking about the future, and this is an immediate future topic. There's a tremendous amount of funding available, and will be available very soon. And in a matter of 18 months to 2 years, if we're not on the train will have left us at the station. So we really want to continue having those conversations and bring more detail to the public on that. So we'd like to thank Ms. Lenoff for joining the group. sharing her expertise and for those participated in that workshop. Thank you. Clean Ocean Action Beach Sweep, the next will be held on April 9th. I know Mayor Buckstein comes every year. Registration will open by the end of February, cleanoceanaction.org. Our waterfront steward, Linda Penn Rotors, will again serve as captain for the event. Strongly encourage everyone to participate. If you've taken a walk near the water, with some of the weather events that we've had, have a tremendous need for this type of event. And actually, the Environmental Commission had further discussion about scheduling our own beach sweeps and scheduling more frequently. And so we will share information as that becomes available. EC also passed a treaty resolution in honor of Don Gates, who's a former member of the Environmental Commission from 2012 to 2020. And last item for the EC is planning on working with the AmeriCorps Watershed Ambassador to schedule a water testing event for our creeks, and we will make sure that the public is aware to participate in that. Throw some waders on and check out Many Mine Creek and other areas. Shade Tree has not met since our last meeting, so nothing new to report. Parking, I think we've talked a lot about parking, so we'll leave it at that. That Mayor has her report.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Start with recreation. Since Councilman Murphy mentioned it, we did talk about a comedy night, and I see Tony, our great owner-operator of the theater. Tony, we might have a conversation with you a little bit later, see if there's something that we can maybe possibly do with the theater for a comedy night through the Recreation Committee. Sorry to spring that on you right now. I was gonna see you over the weekend at some point. By the way, go see Dog. I just saw it this week. It's playing theater. It's a really sweet movie. We also, in terms of Easter egg, the Easter egg hunt is now officially on the schedule. Just put in an application for that with our special events committee. That's going to be April 10th at Fireman's Field, 11 to 1, I believe. We also did just formally approve. I'll be doing a music festival again this year, as I mentioned last meeting, probably likely September, and not as many bands as we had last year, probably about 5 bands, and run from about 5 p.m. to about 10 p.m. down at the marina. Parking committee, the only thing I will add is that we did reach out to Wells Fargo again in regard to using their parking lot after hours. Unfortunately, what we didn't know is that there was a change in the manager over there, and Mr. Faragina has very ably reached out to them, and we've sort of started from ground zero again with the new manager. The new manager is now going to talk with corporate. Unfortunately, we didn't know about that change, so hopefully we can get some sort of feedback from them as soon as we can, as the way corporate America sometimes works, so maybe it's weeks. Maybe sooner, who knows. What I was going to say to the gentleman that was here from the First Avenue Playhouse is that... Oh, there he is. So maybe Mr. Fisher, I'm sorry, I got you. I saw you get up and leave, and I didn't see you in the back of the room. Mr. Fisher, maybe you can talk with the gentleman from First Avenue and let him know that we're conducting a survey with the Chamber of Commerce, and the survey was, the idea was brought to us by the Chief of Police about his concern, his letter, maybe there's a way, can we extend the parking on First Avenue from 2 hours to 3 hours? So we created, in conjunction with the Chamber of Commerce, a survey to go out to all of our businesses on First Avenue, try to see what their feedback is, if they like that idea or they don't like that idea, and then we'll report in some way, some fashion, to Mayor and Council, whatever the results are on that. Technology and communication, we had a pre-install meeting here about a week and a half ago with our live stream vendor that we approved. Our borough administrator popped in for a little bit, our clerk, our clerk Michelle, she made an appearance. I also met with our court clerk and Jimmy Phillips, head of DPW, sat down, went through where we thought the screen should be placed and our speakers and the camera and all that. And the only other thing I'll add is that we had a electrician come in, give us a quote, and we're soliciting for other quotes to actually string the electricity to the monitors into the camera. And so we'll bring that forward when we get some of those quotes and we get some choice. I'll also say since I just mentioned Mr. Phillips' name, Atlantic Highlands Day, the application went in for that, which is Atlantic Highlands Day featuring Tattoo Truck. That'll be Saturday, October 22nd. I know that seems like a huge distance from now, but when you're organizing it, it comes up very quickly. And it should be fun because we're planning on more live music and maybe some artist vendors and more food. And the last thing I'll say is, in terms of regionalization, we have a meeting on March 7th that Senator O'Scanlan has sort of organized, and we'll have various members, Board of Education, our committee will be there, and other people representing Seabright and Highlands will also be there, and we'll report back on that. And that's it, Mayor.
Okay. Regarding finance, we're going to have a meeting hopefully in the next week. We're going to get together and kind of review where we are. If not, Rob, maybe the week after. I think we're about ready to start sitting down and really hashing that out. So, Harbor, Ms. Owen, like I mentioned, we are meeting Tuesday, so we'll have a better update on next meeting. Personnel, I want to touch on, because we did interview, well, we interviewed six people for the chief position, but one of the things we did walk away from on that is the quality of our officers is really amazing. It's a, you know, it's a really tough decision to try to separate one from the bunch. I think we're a pretty lucky community to have such professionalism, and people generally care about our town and the community and people in it. The whole concept of community policing is just it's pretty neat. I mean, I didn't have that when I grew up. It's a little different. And also, hopefully tonight in executive session, we're going to discuss the PBA contract, get that straightened out. And I'd like to see a resolution on that. I'll let the police commissioners go discuss more of that as they want. And on open space with the certification, one of the nice things about that is if you don't really know where to start, you can go on the website. You can actually purchase native plants that you can start planting in order to meet some of the needs on the checklist. And one of the other things that was interesting, because we're talking about mosquitoes tonight and spraying, that I'd learned is, you know, ivy, I've got a lot of ivy in front of my house because it helps keep the ground in and the slope, and so does my neighbor and other people. Well, it's a really good habitat for mosquitoes. And so, you know, one of the things we can do, and it's really, you can replace that. I don't know how that could be something difficult, depending how big it is. But if you put native species in there, pollinators, you'd actually be reducing the impact of the mosquitoes. And we wouldn't even need the requirement to, you know, spray or use any pesticides on them would be reduced as well. So it would have, I think, a double impact. And if you're following the situation with bees and how we're losing bees and how incredibly important they are to our environment, you know, this is something that, to me, just makes a lot of sense. So I'm really excited about it as well. On the cannabis front, we're trying to put together, listening to everybody's objections, people who are for it, against it, and see what we can come up with, some kind of happy medium that we can present, maybe have one more discussion, and then put it to bed one way or the other. So thank you very much. I'm good.
Steve already mentioned personnel. He already mentioned personnel. We did interview some great candidates. Scott's a great choice. We wish him all the best. You know, he'll be starting effective Monday, the 1st. And tomorrow at 3 o'clock, after 42 years, we will have a walkout, weather permitting, right outside here, outside Borough Hall for the chief. If weather is inclement, which is a possibility, we'll be having it in the bay of the fire department. So all are invited to attend that.
It's at 3.
3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Is that what I said? 3. More along the lines of police, you may see, hopefully, within the next week or so, new squad cars getting lettered up and everything, sirens and bells and whistles put on, so that should be showing up in the next week or two. Kudos does have to go out to Officer Dave Cunha. Last week, I guess it was about the 13th, we had some vandals who decided they were going to put their mark on our basketball court. He went out, took the report on it due to some vulgarity and things that were written out there. He took it upon himself. Being the DPW was not in at the evening, he found a way to get it all cleaned up before they got in. So kudos to him. the juveniles who had been vandalized in Pompamora Park were apprehended and charged, so that case was closed. As Councilman Dockery said, we will be meeting with EMS shortly. I think it's the 23rd for the EMS meeting. And also, Sarah Weimer, our OEM coordinator, issued an advisory tonight. We expect a winter storm system coming through. We don't expect any accumulations of snow, but there could be possible icing, so use precaution. I know that there are a couple DPW guys who are on tonight, just in case. Probably see some super conditions at the top of the hill. And I believe that's all I have for us.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Very quickly, I'll get my teams moving on the MS4 reports and then the GIPTES permit application to make sure the borough stays in compliance in those aspects. Since the last meeting, I've been working with the administrator in Public Works to prepare updated construction cost estimates so we could bundle up an upcoming road program. So we're continuing to work on that. And then I just wanted to report next week we're meeting with Monmouth County Engineering to talk about some of their infrastructure within the borough, any upcoming projects. I know we've been hearing some concerns about the stone bridge and the wall on Ocean, so well, hopefully we'll be able to come back with some answers.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you. No report tonight, Mayor.
Thank you.
Just a few items. On February 17th, the majority of the lights on Memorial Parkway, Route 36, were repaired by JCP&L and are illuminated at night, with the exception of two. There is additional work that needs to be done on the remaining two lights. JCP&L needs to do more underground work, which requires highway shutdown and traffic control. JCP&L will work to get it scheduled and will be in contact with us. Earlier in the month, we alerted the county that several repairs were needed at the Ocean Boulevard County Route 8 Bridge. During the week of February 14th, the county repaired the two buckled road surface seams at either end of the bridge. The repairs to the bridge railing and sidewalk are scheduled for 2023. On February 14th, I attended a Zoom roundtable meeting held by the New Jersey Housing and Mortgage Finance Agency, NJHMFA, which was led by Executive Director Melanie R. Walter. On February 15th, the Atlantic Islands Green Team invited me to attend their virtual monthly meeting, which I happily did, and participated in their agenda discussions. Some of those discussions involved grants to seek out the desire for EV stations in the municipality, the Sustainable Jersey Initiative, and tallying and accruing additional points as time moves forward. With the Sustainable Jersey Initiative to advance our standing. The purchasing of, as we turn over borough vehicles as they age, investing in vehicles that have environmental attributes such as fuel efficiency, et cetera, with the goal of long-term, if we do have EVs implemented and installed in the town, to then have some of the borough vehicles to be EV vehicles. At the request of the Parking Committee, as was mentioned earlier this evening, I met with the current branch manager at Wells Fargo to restart the discussions regarding possible borough public use of their parking lot after hours and on weekends when they're closed. That's the completion of my report. As was mentioned, please be careful tonight during the inclement weather. And congratulations to both Chief Ross back on his walkout event tomorrow and Chief Reinert on his new position. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, and at this time, I have just a few correspondence that I need to read into the minutes. I know that I was not here at the last meeting, so these are from January 31st. And it says, Mayor and Council, while the Atlantic Highlands First Aid Squad is a separate entity from the borough, I would like to be certain the mayor and council are aware of the outstanding volunteerism of the men and women of the squad and will continue all efforts to ensure both donations and more volunteers to keep the squad as outstanding as it is. I draw specific attention to member Ed Citron. This morning, shortly after 3 a.m., I was witness to a generous attention Ed Citron gives to the borough and its residents. He accompanied Police Sergeant Fair and Patrolman Soden when they responded to a call for assistance for an elderly woman in distress. Mr. Citron, with his EMT experience and knowledge, was able to assess the woman, make the determination a trip to the hospital, which had been most distressful for her, was not necessary, nor could it provide any further benefits than the officers could ensure she had at home. While our officers indeed have outstanding knowledge and experience in immediate first aid, having a professional in Mr. Citron assure them with his advanced medical knowledge free the officers to attend to a myriad of items they had to complete to ensure safety for the woman and comfort and peace for the remainder of the night. Too often we do not recognize the value of our volunteers. Indeed, they are priceless, and I thank you for continued support you give to the squad and ask that Mr. Citron in particular be publicly acknowledged for his service. Gratefully, Muriel J. Smith, 99 Center Avenue, Atlantic Commons, New Jersey, 07716. She's absolutely right. Ed is really the backbone of the first aid, always there for everyone. And I have another one from Ms. Smith. Once more, I would like to praise and commend the outstanding work efforts, professionalism, and knowledge of members of the Atlantic Highlands Police Department, specifically at this time, Sergeant Brian Fair and Patrol Travis Soden. When they received an emergency call sometime after 3 a.m. Monday, January 31st, the officers immediately responded to the scene and had sufficient knowledge to recognize how to gain entry to the house without causing any damage, and quickly enough to aid an elderly woman. They were able to size up the situation immediately and put the woman at ease and feeling secure in the attention she was receiving. First aid member Ed Citron responded to the call as well, and he, as a professional EMT, assured himself and the officers there was no need for a hospital trip for the woman. Both officers then quickly made arrangements to ensure safety for the woman for the rest of the night until her out-of-state family could be notified. Since this was the second time within the week the department responded to this address, the officers relied properly on past knowledge to continue to ease the situation. While maintaining their professionalism, the officers never lost fact the woman knew and recognized them as friends and local young men who would always be there to help her. Professionalism is found in many police departments, certainly more in this department than in many others. But being able to maintain those professional standards while at the same exuding a neighborly friendship and assurance gives more assistance and comfort to a frightened resident than can be taught. It appears that here in Atlantic Highlands, notably most recently with Sergeant Fair and Patrol Soden, these characteristics are ingrown, exhibited in every situation. Thanks to the officers as well as to Chief Rosbach for maintaining such high standards in every phase of police work here in Atlantic Highlands. Sincerely, Muriel Smith. So once again, just shows what a great force we have here in town. And I would just like to recognize Cedric, the mail carrier for the town, who has been here forever. I went to the postmaster and tried to get some information about him. You know, it's like when you're, who are the people in your neighborhood? Cedric is a shining star. He really always had a smile on his face when delivering the mail, and a how do you do to everyone that he saw. So I was told that he is a Falcons fan, and that he has seven children, 11 grandchildren, and his beautiful wife is Ida, and he is really looking forward to his retirement, and all the best of luck to Cedric. And for my friends on the dais, there's a parade this year, March 19th. So, they asked me if we would like to participate in walking in the Highlands St. Patrick's Day Parade. So, I'll push you. I have a wheelchair, you know.
You can hop on my back, son.
So we can have...
You carry one of those. I can't.
You can walk.
I can't.
Carlos has to be, like, why?
I'm the starter for the last 12 years.
I know, but you can walk.
We can go last.
We'll make arrangements.
Do what?
We could go last.
Go last, exactly.
We'll make
sure. We'll circle you back.
Oh, I know. So, all right.
You can start.
I'm hearing to everyone...
Sounds fun. I would never turn you down on this. You wanted to do this so badly.
Oh, I know. I know it. I love this part. And I think that's it.
Mayor, we're acknowledging people, and I meant to do this 2 weeks ago, but we lost somebody about a month ago, Maggie Morrow, who was the longtime head of our Atlantic Highlands Arts Council, and so. Our thoughts are with her family.
I'm trying to put a voice out together for her, because as you all know, leukemia lymphoma is close to my heart, and the one thing that we need more of are people to donate. Now, if you don't and can't donate, you can always bring a friend to donate for you, or in some way promote it. So we're always looking for blood donations. So yeah, I concur. So right now we have public comments and questions. So I'm gonna start here and then move to Zoom. So those people that are here tonight, any comments?
Question? Sure. I knew Mike and Tony.
Yep.
If you say, I was on 71 Asbury, and I run the movie theater now. So I have just a question about the parking. So the next step would be more discussion, is that right?
Right.
And is
personnel finance.
Okay.
I would assume too.
Okay, great. Well, I just wanted to know, and then will there be more discussion in figuring out if we want to have somebody do a report or consultation?
Feasibility study, right?
Feasibility, okay. And is that the one that, so I guess my thought on that is, in my experience, in my other job, is that usually when you have these kind of studies, they end up just telling you things you already know at the end of the report. So I would just encourage the council to think long and hard if this is really needed, because I think, you know, as someone mentioned before, I think everybody here, especially, we all know what the town needs, what we don't need, what's the constituents. So just think long and hard about spending, you know, our money on a report that may not go as, you know, tell us anything new, especially the report is done by somebody who builds, you know.
Right.
Correct. Thank you. It's nice seeing you.
Harold Smith, 31 City Hall Road, Red Bank, towboat and Sissy's Place. About a month ago, I mentioned the towboat building, and I really have heard nothing. I saw one guy show up, two guys actually, with a ladder to fix a trip that trips on your head as you walk in a brand new building next door. And they left, and 5 minutes later, Ozzy got hit on the head with water as they left.
No.
So I'm just wondering if anything's being done about it.
You know, we checked into it, and we were told that it was being done, so we're going to have to go back and maybe we sit down together. We go in.
Because, I mean, you and I talked on the phone.
Yeah.
I know Mr. Krause came down. I think Mr. Wall came down. I mean, this is what I was told. So
I've met with the lease committee. I'm meeting with them tomorrow.
Okay, good.
And we've talked about the lease. They booked at the building, and everybody's like, yeah, you're right. There's a lot going on at the building. The borough guys did put some kind of, like, plastic over the flood vents to try to keep water from going in that way. But the building, the clock is hanging down. There's really just nothing being done, and me being the tenant, nobody's saying to me that they're doing anything with it. Nobody's even mentioned it. I've talked to Mr. Flieger, he was the harbor manager, and he says he's not really involved in the Togo building.
All right.
Well, we know who is.
Tuesday, this is.
Yeah, but we know who is, and maybe.
Well, that's what I'm just asking, because it's been a month and we're really hearing nothing about.
At our harbor meeting, there was a report given to us, so, and I don't know if you were at that meeting, but.
That's right, you're out.
I hope you were.
But why don't we do this? Let's set a time when we all sit down together in our same room.
Yes.
That way, because I think that's the best way to get it aired out. Because I'm being told something different, and, but I also know, but I know you're. Right, that's what I mean, and you're there, so I think we need to really address that.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because the communications that I've seen is that you were on vacation, they were trying to work with you to schedule time to get the repairs done, there was a request for a certificate of insurance from the individual.
I think you've got two things confused, with all due respect. I'm talking about the Togo building, you're talking about the leak.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, you're correct. You're correct.
Issues, right, right. One is being Mr. Flieger is working on.
Right, you are correct.
Okay.
Right, yep.
Yeah, I'm talking about the Togo building, right? I know what you're talking about. So let's figure that out, and we'll check tomorrow. You want, and maybe we'll get in touch with you.
Yeah. And even when I was on the phone with you that day, it was a rainy day when you were in at the Savannah Airport, and I was at the Togo building, viewing the problem myself. Right. So I, like, we are really are, I'm surprised.
And I understand, but I think where the problem is you got somebody saying that everything is okay, and they're kind of who told the Harbor Commission and sign off on pay this, and
right.
It's truly not okay.
Well, that's
ask Mr. Curry that's going tomorrow. They walk around the building. I can show you cloth hanging down. I can show you all kinds of stuff. I mean, Again, I was in Savannah when he did the call.
We'll sit down with him.
Yeah, because I know you're right. I know they covered the vents to do an analysis to see if the moisture would come in when there's inclement weather. And it sounds like what you're saying is beyond that, there hasn't really been much or anything done, correct?
Honestly, two guys came with a ladder, went up on the ladder with a spray can of Flex Seal. Sprayed it and said it's all fixed. And then it wasn't 10 minutes later, it dripped on top
of it. All right, well,
and I'm just like,
we'll regroup. No, thank you.
I mean, I'm meeting with the lease committee at 8:00 at my office tomorrow morning, but that's more towards the lease, you know, when Mr. Curry and Curtis were there, they started walking around, and if you really take a walk around, you'll see.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, so I don't see hands. Oh, so sorry. I just want to talk about the parking structure. I have sat on a few parking meetings, and to me, it seems like a necessity of what I'm going to do now and maybe in a few years. I am hearing great ideas about affordable housing and things like that. I mean, I think that could definitely best help get grants to build it. I think that's great. Also, it's maybe not just parking, you can also consider like rental scooters or city bikes, which goes to the idea of a lot of people driving, and maybe if there are people who are renting apartments, they get access to a motorcycle, or I don't know if they're called motorcycle, regular bikes, renting bikes, whatever. So some of those spaces could be designated to a company that would rent it out. And, you know, I don't know if anyone's seen the city bikes in the city, but they think of a lot of space. But that could kind of solve if we decide, you know, we always park this space down the road, some of those spaces could be utilized, something like that. And that would actually go towards the maintaining the sustainable New Jersey accreditation, something like that would get us a lot of points. So solar panels or EV charge in general. About the EV chargers, Flow that came and did a talk with us at the Environmental Commission. When they install chargers in parking garages, a lot of them are like hanging from the ceiling. And so it seems like to me that it'd be pretty easy to make parking spaces eligible for each charge flow, regular parking space, and it wouldn't require a whole lot of upfront decision making, just so we think about that. It could be a regular parking garage that could be retrofitted to be like, you know, an EV charger garage in the future. I like the idea of everyone being able to walk everywhere. When I bought the house that I bought, I fully intend on walking everywhere. Unfortunately, there are no sidewalks where I live, and driving on that highway, I know it gives my mom a heart attack, so I'm going to the movie on a Saturday night, I have to drive, there's no way I can walk. And so that's what we think about. Obviously, our small businesses are the backbone of this community, so I would love for us to do everything we can to make sure we can succeed, especially because all of these new businesses have so many great ideas to bring people into the community. Passing a lot of their marketing, they are spending a lot of money trying to get people to come here from out of town. It's a great place to go straight to Parker Drive. And then when I go to Red Bank, I'm going to circle a local parking and go straight to that lot that I know that there will be a spot. I know I can pay for it, but it's not worth the time looking around. And I feel like that could happen for people coming out of the town and when their clients didn't know about the Parker Drive and I didn't go look. And hopefully that would open up spaces for businesses that want to have that parallel parking, like First Cup and Bagel Place. So I'm fully, I hope that you guys are taking seriously the parking study. I also think what Tony said about the feasibility study, maybe just skip that one thing, it would be awesome. But I'm sure Mr. Fisher knows why we maybe can't do that, but it seems like a waste of money. We know what we need. We don't need. Number two, Governor Murphy announced yesterday that he's going to be releasing all the additional information about cannabis in the next 2 weeks. So San Jose is going to be ramping up in the month of March. So I hope that the cannabis community would be taking seriously any small businesses that want to start in the Atlantic Islands who have reached out. I think that our town would be vastly financially benefiting from that. Would help with the parking structure a lot. I want to do a special thanks for Mr. Phillips and Mr. Ferragina. The Lenape Woods fixes are huge for me, and I'm there every day, and I notice it every week, and it's amazing. Specifically, the Boy Scout Bridge. When my husband and I decided to buy our house, the previous homeowners had made a video of their backyard, walking from the backyard to the Boy Scout Bridge. And without that data, we would have bought our house, and so that bridge was lost me. There was a big hole in it, and DPW said fill the hole with a new kind of wood. And I guess it's not really cheesy, but I think that whole situation is pretty on par with where we are in regards to canvas and also part of the structure and everything. That new piece of wood is so yellow, and the whole bridge is so brown, and like the change of it's a little jarring at first, but as we change as a society, as we adapt to these new post-pandemic world we're living in, it's going to be a little longer, honestly, having that new piece of wood down is just really totally usable. And I'm sure in a few years, it's going to be the same color as all the other wood. So I just want to point that out. Going back to the upsetting thing with the mosquitoes, I know that this Monmouth County, this is the same problem that we have with the knotweed. Like, they just go and they just like mow it all down, and we're just like, well, it's the county, they must know what they're doing. But like, we know that they're not doing the right thing with the knotweed, so how do we know they're doing the right thing with the pesticides? They also mow down the wildflowers on the highway, and I know that they're taking strides to stop doing that so the wildflowers can grow. So there are a lot of things that I'm glad that we have decided to allow the environmental professional to look at it. I wish they had voted on it. Regarding senior center, I did meet with somebody today who Ellen gave me the information for. She does arts and crafts for seniors, so I'd love to pass that information on all of you soon. And finally, you mentioned ivy. Ivy's actually an invasive species, which is super interesting. So it's good to get rid of ivy in general. But also another thing that my husband recently told me is that the best thing you can do for mosquitoes is mint. And so if you put a fan in the porch or something like that, it actually works better than a citronella candle or any kind of flame or something like that. So for anybody who doesn't want to deal with mosquitoes, that could be also a better option. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes. Cool. Well, I'll get 22 Lori Road. Very quick. Lori, when we spoke at the last meeting, you said that you had a listing of the.
I'm sorry.
So it's okay. I'll give you my email address. I don't think you have it, so let me.
Yes, please.
Very easy. 2P's, epbarbeo@gmail.com. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Anyone else? Okay. How many people online right now?
12 attendees, 4 hands raised.
Okay.
I'll bring over Zach Brennan.
Hello?
Good evening. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Hi, Zach Brown, 6 Victorian Woodlands Drive. I've heard a couple of members of the council mention cannabis tonight and that you guys are taking steps to move that process forward. Do we have any kind of idea what those next steps in that process might be and when we might be able to get a kind of report to the public on where we're going?
Not yet.
I think we're really weighing the public comment and also what other towns are doing. Mr. Brackey and I were extensively quoted in the Two River Times this week from that. So we're very committed to investigating the 6 licenses, what in our research and what we're seeing in other towns we think might be right for Atlantic Highlands, if any, and then having another conversation with the public about it.
Yeah, we'd like to put some bullet points together on things we would consider or think would help alleviate some of the concerns. And, you know, based on that, those maybe would be what would ultimately be in an ordinance. And then have the public decide, you know, again.
Does it?
Okay. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Krause?
Hello?
Yes, Ken Krause, 77 Bayside Drive, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I have comments on three different items, the municipal clock, the parking, and then tennis. On the clock, I'd like to thank whoever picked out the design. As Mr. Ferrazino said, it matches the our street lights. I think somebody did a great job on that, so thank you. On parking, I would be very hesitant to start a survey now. I'm optimistic that the pandemic may be over, but I'm not sure that the commutation patterns have gone back to anywhere near normal, if they ever do. You can see that in the C Street parking lot. I know my own firm twice, once after Alpha, once after Delta, started a plan to return to the office, and then with a variety and following it, canceled those plans and still hasn't decided what to do. I can see it on the New Jersey Transit train. I've been into New York a couple times a month for at least the last year. So I'm not sure where this is going to end up. If anything, I think starting a parking study now might underestimate what the needs are. If commutation surges after that, and we find that many of the C Street customers are staying in town at dinner. So that's that. The third thing, cannabis. I'm on the task force. I'm also wearing the hat of being a resident. And last year, after the statute was passed legalizing cannabis in New Jersey, I brought up the issue of whether the town should look at other suburban locations, see what was happening, rather than relying on what might be happening in New York or Newark or Los Angeles, etc. That led the mayor to suggest that I be on the task force, and I accepted it. So I did some research. In some ways, it you proved the old saw that it's difficult to prove a negative. Kind of studied by the International City and County Management Association of 9 towns that are not major cities. In 5 different states. I also attended a webinar that included a Massachusetts suburban town. There do seem to be some issues with cultivation that you may or may not want to have in town. Manufacturing, there are certain types of manufacturing that could be an issue. But retailing, there didn't seem to be issues. So I think when the council considers this, if there are no negatives, at least for the retailer, why let the residents of Atlantic Highlands and the C Street commuters purchase their cannabis in Highlands and Red Bank and let those towns get the tax? A number that's been thrown around, and I hesitate to think that it's real, is that a retailer could do $10 million in Atlantic Highlands. That would be, at 2%, that's $200,000. That could help pay for a parking garage. And even if it's only $5 million, that's $100,000. So anyway, I'm sure they'll have more to say after the cannabis task force meets again, but that's my personal thought at this point. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Brown. And went down and was re-raised. Ms. Brown, is he here?
On mute. You should probably see that then.
Hello?
There we go.
Hi.
My name is Jane Crutton. I live at the Ocean Boulevard. And my concern is what you guys were talking about earlier about the parking garage. Strady Rass was mayor, I don't know, years ago, and he had a proposal in Atlantic Highlands, which was a very good proposal, but nobody wanted to go along with it. And I think that you should include him in your study to consider a parking garage. Take care.
Thank you.
Mayor Rass was a part of the parking committee for quite a while, and was a proponent of the garage, and he weighed in on that several times in parking committee meetings.
No issue on Mayor Rass.
I don't think there's a door. No. Okay, so.
You have another hand, Ms.
Rose. Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, Sarah Collins, of one of the things that I mentioned in the parking presentation was pile up the painted little parking, and I think that came up. There was a planning board meeting when there was an application. When all these units came online and the parking was it waived outright or was there payment?
No. So I wrote the payment in lieu of parking. And we passed it three and a half years ago. Unfortunately, the projects on First Avenue were already approved by the planning board. And so the barn door was sort of open, and that's why I decided to write it, because things are still changing on First Avenue, and looking forward, at least we're protected. It is $25,000 that goes into an escrow account for every parking space that a developer is deficient in terms of the state requirement. That escrow fund goes towards parking garage to help bond, and it also goes towards other programs such as you know, charging units, awareness in terms of bikes, ride sharing, anything that it relates to parking and traffic congestion and the solution to those problems.
A study?
Hmm?
Maybe a study?
It totally, it very well, it, yes, it could, because it would relate to this. Unfortunately, I thought we were going to get two or three spaces, like 75,000, and then a developer withdrew their application because they were deficient and they haven't reapplied. But so there's nothing in that escrow right now. With some of these other projects that I think are on the drawing board, they're going to be deficient and money will go into that escrow account. But we are covered. So every, I didn't want to interrupt Mr. Zullo, but we're covered on that front.
Okay. And then one other thing that just occurred to me. Before we even proceed with a parking study, we could pretty easily look into how our current pricing is for the permits. I know that that has come up with the parking committee, and like in Red Bank, an annual permit is $1,000. Here it's $25. So there's clearly like a market misalignment there that could help to kind of dissuade folks from buying those permits and maybe bring down that 110 permit number to that municipal lot. Just a suggestion.
Thank you. Okay, so going once, going twice. All right, so, that I'm just here. One thing before we go into executive session. I think now what's happening in this world, that whether we're Democrats or Republicans, we need to come together as a country and know that we're Americans and we need to do what's right for this country because we're all Americans. I would like you to pray for the people of Ukraine and their leaders, and please pray for our president too. So with that, I need a motion and a second to go into executive.
Murphy.
Doherty.
Okay, roll call. All in favor?
Aye. I would do a roll call. Yep.
Roll call.
Mr. Murphy.
Yes.
Ms. Hohenleitner.
Yes.
Mr. Doherty.
Yes.
Mr. Crowley.
Yes.
Mr. Barakia.
Yes.
Mr. Bonds.
Yes.
We're good.
Can I get a motion to come out of the executive session?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Yeah, motion to close public meeting.
And some of
the. All in favor?
Aye.
Yeah. I'm reaching out, buddy.
Brian Bond.
I'm flying. I'm flying back home.